Good morning, everyone. This is Friday morning, February 25th, and we're at Miami Beach City Hall for the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee. If you're joining virtually, you can do that by calling in at 301-715-8592 or 888-475-4499. The webinar ID is 863-6059-5462. And again, this is the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee of the City of Miami Beach. And so let's get started. I know we've got some people. We're waiting. Also, we'll get started. I know Commissioner Arriola mentioned he was going to run a few minutes late, but let's get started. So do we have anyone that is here that is urgent to get back, or we'll just start then? Why don't we start, Commissioner Samuelin, with your item 15, discussion regarding cryptocurrency in Miami Beach.
Sure. So
I'll let you tee that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations on your appointment. Looking forward to working with you on the committee.
Thank you.
The item 15, and just to be clear, I believe Commissioner Fernandez has a very similar item regarding cryptocurrency. So while I have an item, he may have a parallel item, or this item may be his in spirit as well. I think it is clear that digital currencies are making an impact on a global basis. And there are some very important developments going on. And I think what is important is that we begin the conversation as to how do digital currencies, be it Bitcoin or others, fit into Miami Beach. Especially timely is we have the Bitcoin conference coming to Miami Beach. And as we think about economic development, I like to kid, you know, if you can work from anywhere in the world, you might as well work from Miami Beach. So with that said, I think there's a couple buckets, and I'm going to invite the administration and maybe Raquel very, very soon here to first talk about economic development and how do we be a center for digital currency, of course, building on some of the great work that Mayor Suarez and the City of Miami's done. That's probably the biggest thing I want to focus on. I think at some point we need to think operationally about how might this impact the city. At some point, could we accept digital currency? Should we be thinking about that? I think that's another topic, but the primary focus for me is economic development. So if I might yield to Raquel, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioner Samuelin. So the Economic Development Department has been focused on tech and financial services industries as directed by the City Commission. With that, we have been exploring the cryptocurrency subcategory within the fintech industry, and we have been networking, we have been researching, and we think we're making gains in that ecosystem. One of the things that we are proposing to do is that through our job creation incentive program, which was approved by the commission in March of last year, we could modify the incentive program to focus on startups, which is something that we've been talking about for a couple of months now. Currently, the program offers a financial incentive based on performance for companies bringing new or relocated jobs at a minimum of 10 jobs at high wages, averaging 125% of the average wages for Miami-Dade County or the state of Florida, whichever is greater, which right now is about $68,000. Now, because of that benchmark to have 10 new employees, it does limit startups from being able to participate. And we do know that a lot of crypto companies, especially at the beginning, are very small. And we think that if we modify this incentive program to allow for smaller companies, we think that we can capture some of the crypto businesses that are interested in opening up in Miami Beach.
Mr. Chair, if I may. First, I want to congratulate you, Raquel, and the entire administration on, you know, revving up the economic engine. You know, often we take actions, and it takes a long time to see the results. But I think the job creation program has been one we've seen it. For those who haven't really had the chance, can you just take 30 seconds and give us the headlines on the results, the companies who have taken advantage of that, are coming here, paying taxes, creating jobs?
Sure. Thank you so much, Commissioner. So we have had quite a bit of success with that program. We have jobs in the pipeline, 215 jobs actually, ranging from $69,000 to $150,000 per year in wages. We have two tech companies and two financial services companies that are participating, and we have a few more in the pipeline, which we will touch on at next month's Finance Committee meeting, where we provide our quarterly update, and at that time, that's when we usually would recommend firms for recommendation to the City Commission.
Yeah.
We also have had success with our expedited plan review and permitting incentive program that is done administratively, so the firms participating in that would not need the Finance Committee's recommendation or the City Commission's approval, but rather the administration handles that, and we've had several firms participate. So.
Yeah. It's a really good news story, and really appreciate everything you're doing. So I know it goes without saying that we're going to fully capitalize on Bitcoin 2022. They're coming right across the street. If I understood you right, the idea on the table is to sort of expand the incentives for more entrepreneurial companies, and that many of them, not all of them, but many of them could be in this digital currency space. And then implicit in what you're saying, I think, is we'd probably message in that way. Conceptually, I really like it. I think that's a great direction. What would you need from this body? Do you have a recommendation today? Is that something you'd want to formalize? Where do we go from here?
We'd like an opportunity to develop that a little further and come back to the Finance Committee next month with the parameters for such an amendment to the program. And hopefully we can get that to the City Commission in April.
That's great. So just to close, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion that we accept the recommendation of the administration to go do that homework, to come back to us with what a proposed expanded program would be targeting entrepreneurs, and sort of wrapping around the messaging around digital currency.
So I'm very interested in the subject as well, so thanks for bringing the item. I'm okay with that. I'm just wondering about the timing, because we've got so many items, and if there's no urgency, can we move this instead of next month to the following month, or do we need to do it?
Well, I'll defer to Raquel. I tend to have a little urgency around this with Bitcoin 2022 coming here.
When is the date on that?
So Bitcoin begins on April 6th, and okay. Actually Mayor Gelber will be participating. We also will have a significant presence. Our marketing and communications department is helping us.
Okay, so let's do it then.
That.
We'll do it next month, and so.
And actually, the City Commission meeting is on April 6th, and so potentially we could have a new incentive option to announce on the first day of Bitcoin, which I think would be a really good message to our tech ecosystem.
And we will be meeting in March, right, John?
Correct. That's what I was going to mention, is that the timing all lines up so that we could, the commission could approve this amendment to the program on the very day, first day of the Bitcoin
okay.
conference.
Let's bring it back then in March, so I'll second your motion, and that'll pass, and then we'll see you back on, I think it's March 30th, and then hopefully we'll have something we can move back to the commission on April 6th. That's okay with you, Commissioner?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it. Let's
Thank
close
you.
That item.
Okay.
Commissioner Samuelin, you also have item 14,
yep.
Marine Patrol. I think they may be here if they need to help out. Why don't you take that item, and I'll let you introduce it.
Sure. Let me kick this off, and I'm not sure if there's anyone from the Miami Beach Commission for Women here, but I know they've really been instrumental, and that committee is doing a lot, and, you know, public safety is important to everyone, including, of course, women who are part of that committee and women across our community. I think it's fair to say during the pandemic, there was a lot more activity on the water, and we are Barrier Island, water matters. I think we all see it. I happen to live on an island. I see it personally. I hear from my neighbors and residents. So we know we have a lot of activity to enhance staffing at MBPD, and that's all good, and we're seeing some early results of some increased visibility of our police, and we are appreciative of that. What this item seeks to do, Mr. Chair, is really just have a conversation about what else could we do to dial up our presence on the water. And I'd like to break it in two parts. One, do we need more headcount? And or two, do we need more assets, i.e. enhanced boats, a new boat? And to have that conversation as we're getting ready for budget season.
Major, good morning. Thank you, committee members. Henry Dosey, Major of Operations for the Police Department. Currently, we are fully staffed at 6 and a sergeant for Marine Patrol, so we've been able to, as we hire, restaff Marine Patrol. We are asking that to give us the chance to go ahead and finish hiring everyone that we are currently trying to get on board, so we reach that 433 number. And at that point, we are planning to increase Marine Patrol up to 10. We currently have one new boat on order. It's a new 25-foot contender. Should be done in the next 4 to 5 months, I hope. And at that point, we will be at 6 boats, which will dramatically increase our visibility along the waterway. The new boat is 25 feet, so it'll have the ability to go north under bridges, which is very important.
Commissioner? Mr. Chair, thank you for that update. So I think I heard heading from 6 to 10 in terms of staffing. Do you need additional resources? Do you feel 10 is right? Is that funded? What can we do on the headcount side from this point, Major?
10 will be from the 433, so that'll come from once we reach that maximum, and we'll be able to staff the 10. We could always use an additional boat. Those run at a hefty price tag. They're about $110,000, $120,000. You could always, you know, we could always use that resource because as the boats age, you know, it takes a while to replace them.
How old are some of our older boats?
Some of are 5 and 6 years, but they are very well maintained.
Good.
You know, they run by hour. So as the engines reach a certain hour, they are fully done or replaced or rebuilt.
Right. And you said we do have one new one coming on that would get us to a total of 6.
Yes, sir.
Do we need 7? Do we need 8?
I don't know about 8. 7 is probably a better number for us. Okay. If we can get to 7, it's okay because that'll always help us out.
Last question for me. Is that something with urgency you'd want us to try and take action and do now, or would you say that's something we could perhaps favorably recommend, you could put it in the budget? We're getting ready for our first budget workshop, and we could allocate a line. I'm looking at you, Major. I'm getting one eye towards our CFO. A thought?
Yeah, I think we could wait. Major, if the timing lines up, the money would be available October. Does that work for you in terms of this additional boat?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Conceptually, I'm on board, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, Mr. Chair.
So, in general agreement, I'm curious about the 6. I mean, I'm sure we don't have 6 on the water at any one time, or maybe we do. So, comment on that. And then, are the 6 a different type of boat so that one is used for one purpose and one is used for another purpose? And the other question is aging. So, what is the oldest boat, and would that one come offline if we got you a new one? So, tell me about that.
So we have different types of boats, a completely sealed ocean rescue boat type, which is completely sealed. That'll hit any all-weather boat. Then we have the contenders, the 35-footers. Those are also able to reach out open ocean. Mm-hmm. And then we have a smaller one, a smaller contender, and a Boston Whaler, which is in the north end, primarily in the north end. The additional 25-footer would be a multi-use, but mostly on the bay side. For patrolling underneath bridges, especially the north and middle. Primarily, that'll be their use. The age of the boats, I think we're fine for the next 3 years. We'll be all right. 2 to 3 years, we'll be fine.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Areola is on the line and has raised his hand, as has Chief Clements, if you'd like to hear from them.
Okay, perfect. Let's hear from Commissioner Areola.
Good morning, Major.
Morning, sir.
I'm a boater, so I'm very familiar with these boats. They're awesome boats. Love contenders. But you know, a couple of things just to understand what our needs are. I mean, what is our jurisdiction on the water? You know, how often do we really go out very far?
Occasionally, we are requested, believe it or not, with the Coast Guard to help assist boats in trouble out in the sea. So we do go out there quite a bit.
But how far? Because the type of vessel we need, I mean, a 35-foot contender can handle rough weather and go out pretty far, but we're never going out more than 3 miles, right?
No, that's about what we're doing for ocean rescue type of things.
Yeah, so that limits what we really need. And then the hulls last forever. I mean, you know, containers are awesome. I mean, the hulls will last 20, 30 years. It's really the engines and then, you know, updating, you know, as new electronics come out. So, you know, I don't think we need new boats per se. It's really the engines and potentially, you know, as new electronics come out on the market, investing in those assets.
And we have been. We've been updating our boats. They're very well maintained. Our folks have a great arrangement with our maintenance crew, and they take them every number of hours are taken for maintenance, and then at certain points they're taken for new engines at some points. But they are, excellent boats.
They're great boats. Are we better off just buying new engines and just making reserves for, you know, new engines every, you know, 2-3 years? Because you guys put a lot of hours on them, but, you know.
Yeah, we have done that. That's currently, we're not trying to buy new boats. I was offered a additional resource, and the chief will probably have an opinion on it. Those contenders will last a lifetime, well maintained, especially the way we take care of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, my question is, you know, obviously, whatever you need, but you know, do we really need more boats, or just to have more spare parts? You know, newer engines, that kind of thing. Because the number of boats we have is going to be limited by how many officers we can have on those boats, and what, you know, I don't want to have is just boats sitting around in, you know, in the marina not being utilized, depreciating. You know, I'd rather see us invest the money in, you know, components and spare parts, especially now that they're all, you know, backlogged, and have those readily available for you.
Yes, sir. And as we said before, we are planning. The chief is planning to staff up Marine Patrol. As we reach that full capacity, we're planning to staff it to 10.
Okay.
So we don't plan to have a boat on the water, in a dock not being used. But, however, we are getting that 6th boat in a few months, and that'll be very helpful for us to be able to respond to North End calls as well and have that one in
the
water.
Do you have all the – between the 25 and 35 – because that's what I heard you say. You have a 25 and a couple 35s, a couple 25s.
I'm not. We have a small whaler that's 21, I believe. Then we have the open rescue boat, which is a fully encapsulated boat. I'm not sure of the size of that one. It's in the 20s, high 20s.
I've offered the chief before, you know, to explore, like, you know, just having jet skis so you can get into, you know, smaller, shallower areas if needed. At the time, he didn't think that was needed, but are there other types of vessels that you feel you might need?
I think that's why they went with the 25-footer this time, because it's a shallower, it can go into shallower waters, and they believe that that was the way to go, and that's why we ordered it.
Yeah. All right. I think the chief has his hand up. He's probably going to ask for a submarine. Let's see.
Okay, let's hear from the chief. Thank you, Commissioner. We'll see you shortly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Let's bring in.
Is it out there to buy, sir? I guess it is.
Well, Chief, with what's happening in the world, we may need one.
I know. It's been interesting the last 24 hours. Henry, thank you. Major Dosey did a great job of, if you will, laying the foundation for what we plan on doing with Marine Patrol. I think it's important. I think this body understands. And by the way, I'm sorry. Good morning. I think this body understands the challenges that Marine Patrol is now facing, where before it was like a 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. kind of endeavor. It now goes into the evening hours. So the increase in staffing now goes into the demand that our residents have had for more of a presence on the water after hours. So, you know, the increase in the numbers from Marine Patrol are going to do just that. It won't be six boats on the water at one time, but it'll be boats on the water at an expanded time frame. So, you know, again, at, you know, 9, 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, all the way till probably about 1 o'clock in the morning, we're going to have a presence on the water and be able to go there. And Commissioner Early, in response to your ask about, you know, how far offshore we'll go, you know, we're a part of a regional water rescue or a waterborne task force that actually goes out and can be called at a moment's notice. So, for example, if we have a vessel that's either taking on water, you know, or, you know, God forbid it's on fire, you know, we'll respond, and the contenders make it very easy to do so. The expanded space gives us the ability to be able to go ahead and put people on the vessel without compromising the vessel's ability to be able to go ahead and stay seaworthy. In addition to that, you're on. The hull on these contenders will last a long time. You know, they're not constantly being put out into those rough waters, so, you know, there is no structural issues associated with that. And you can generally get, you know, a good period of time out of a hull. The engines are what we need to watch. Our Marine Patrol guys are great at being able to make sure that they have a maintenance log that goes ahead and does that. And I would defer to them as far as the recommendation goes on how often we change the motors themselves. But again, it's going to be based on hours. But we're headed in a direction to expand it because we've heard the requests from our residents who want to see more of a presence on the water. And moreover, prevent and detect crime as it's occurring after hours, and that's where we're moving to. So thank you for the opportunity to build on what Major Dose said.
Thank you, Chief. So, Commissioner Samuel, I'm not sure if you know or not where the request, I see this came from the Commission for Women's. Do you know specifically, like, why they brought the item? Did they say in their memo or anything?
Yeah, I'm just to highlight, and I'm going to take from their memo, Mr. Chair, that they were a little concerned that we only, and this is from their statement, one supervisor and five officers assigned to operate five boats in shifts from 1 to 11. They were concerned about Monument Island. Specific issues of quality of life they raise, according to the Marine Patrol Unit, the use of jet skis and charter boats, both legal and illegal, is unprecedented. And their request was more funding in the way of expanded hours, additional personnel, and resources for the City of Miami Beach Marine Patrol Unit. And I'm literally taking from their motion. Okay. So, my mind, if I may, Mr. Chair, you know, obviously we see a need on the water. I appreciate that we have another boat coming. I just want to make sure we're doing everything we're doing. So where I would be of the mind would be to move that we conceptually recognize enhanced needs on the water, that we would support funding for an additional boat and or auxiliary equipment, engines, and the staffing so that they're utilized, and that we request that PD, as part of the budget process, you know, fine-tune that and bring it for the body. So I don't think we want to spend money today. I think we want to give them, in my opinion, our voice of support. Let them do that cooking. Let them come back to us with a recommendation at budget. That would be my motion, if you will.
Yeah, I think that we need to cook this a little more. So I think I'll second that motion. We want to show support. We'd like to see a more detailed proposal as part of the budget cycle. I think we have heard that we don't need to do anything before October 1st, which is when our budget would. So we'll let you all work on that a little bit more. The other thing that I would like you all to do for me is and we don't need to do this here. I can do this offline with you all. I want to have a better understanding of the relationship between the Marine Patrol from the city and the Coast Guard in terms of your responsibilities and duties. But we're going to do that offline, so we don't take the time to do that. So with that, we need, we're just going to get some additional. We're going to show our support today. We're going to get some additional information so that we can consider all this as part of the budget cycle.
Yeah, no problem. We meet with every single department, including the police department. So if that need is there, we will definitely bring it to the forefront as we get into the budget workshops. Yeah,
and it sounds to me like you all have a recognition that you want to get to 10, but that's already included in the headcount that we've already authorized you.
Yes, sir.
And if you need more, you'll come back to us. Go ahead, Commissioner. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's hard to be here late.
Yeah, it's fine.
Keeping with tradition.
Yeah, perfect.
And this is a great discussion, and I want to thank the sponsor for having put it on the agenda. Related to Marine Patrol, but semi-independent, I think at some point I'd like to get some guidance from legal, because we have throughout the city a number of special taxing districts. A lot of them are islands that have done, for example, security special taxing districts. And I think we should explore the concept, given the amount of miles that we have on waterways. I think we have something like 60 miles on waterways. If there is a mechanism through which a special taxing district can fund some of its own, whether it be water security or perhaps, you know, I know the county has a larger Marine Patrol, and some other jurisdictions may have a larger Marine Patrol, maybe off-duty, for their more particular areas. Because some communities may want to enhance what the city can provide. And so at some point, I'd like to, for legal, doesn't have to be today, but in the future, give us some input on that.
We'll be happy to look at that, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, good. I think we can close this item then. So let's do that.
Thank you.
I understand Commissioner Miner is online, and so if he's available, let's take his item 8, discussion regarding the feasibility of incorporating art to public infrastructure.
Commissioner Miner.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate the opportunity. I'll tee it up quickly, and I'll turn it over to staff whether we can incorporate art into public infrastructure, as it says, whether it be electrical boxes, whether we can get artists. Some of it may be volunteer, but I imagine there'll be some cost involved, and just wanted to tee that up for discussion.
Thank you. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Samuelin. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner Miner, Lisa Garcia Arrogante, Director of Tourism and Culture. This is an exciting item. I think we've seen with Little Cloud Sky how wonderful it is to be able to implement public art help change the facade and enhance neighborhoods. This is the third or fourth time that we've heard something similar from different bodies, and we look to, if this item is to be recommended, we have a budget that we can provide to you today to do something kind of as a pilot program. And so,
go ahead.
Okay. So the budget that we're recommending would be to start about $50,000. And the neighborhood that we think that if this were to be recommended would be 44th Street Corridor. We think that would be a neighborhood that could really benefit from something like this. Also, the Tourism and Culture Department would work with our Public Works Department to identify which structures are owned by the City of Miami Beach, because that would actually help a lot in the feasibility of this project.
And is this specific to any particular, I think you mentioned electrical boxes or something, so that's what this is related to?
Sure, or we could look at anything else. It could be any other type of public infrastructure that belongs to the city that we think would work well.
And is there an average cost per unit, if you will?
So we had examples of a project that Miami-Dade County did over 10 years ago, and at that budget of $35,000, it was about maybe $1,200 to $1,300 per box. Again, I'm adding about a 25% in costs, so that's why I'm asking for 50 if that were to be recommended.
Yeah. John, do you have any comment on this? Is this something that are we looking at this for in the budget cycle, or we're looking for this as an immediate?
I mean, I would prefer to do it during the budget cycle if there is no time sensitivity to it.
Let's ask Commissioner Miner. Commissioner Miner, I'm supportive of this initiative. Can we do this during the budget cycle? Is that something that would work for you? I think your mic is off. We can't hear you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yes, I'm okay with that.
Perfect. If you want to make a motion?
I'm
learning my new role. I got to learn the rules. Commissioner Samuelson, do you want to make a motion?
But I'm hearing and sensing what he might say and the administration to sort of accept this recommendation as part of the budget process, up to $50,000 in a pilot capacity on 41st, the electrical boxes or something as agreed. Mr. City Attorney,
just that Commissioner Areola has his hand up.
Okay. But that would be my motion.
Okay, Commissioner Areola, go ahead.
Yeah, so first of all, I love this. And 41st Street would have been my choice as well, so fully supportive. I'm actually driving down 41st Street as we speak, so I think that's an excellent omen. And I see electrical boxes everywhere. Do we have an inventory of how many they are? I never realized there were so many.
Not at this moment, but we will work with Public Works, as I mentioned, to identify which ones are city-owned.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Ariel.
I'm not done. just to try to move, because I like to move fast, I think you're going to have strong support going through the budget cycle. And I know, we can't do contract until we have the procurement, but could we, just to get ahead of it, once we hopefully pass this, can we start getting requests for interest and stuff from local artists so that once the money's appropriated, we could hit the ground running?
Sure. So I could give you an update on the proposed timeline. It would be about 3 to 4 months. It has to go through the Art in Public Places process and then also possible HPB process and, just being able to do the call for artists. That takes about 4 weeks. So I think all in all would be 3 to 4 months.
John.
And when we have the budget workshops, Commissioner, in the June-July timeframe, I think we'll have a pretty good idea if the item is going to be approved. And it's not a big-ticket item. I'm feeling pretty solid on it. So what we'll do is we'll give kind of the green light to the procurement team and to Lissette's team to go ahead and get a running start so that when the funds are technically available October 1st, that they can start hopefully doing some implementation.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 4 months from. I'm not done. Okay. So we're talking 4 months from the time we issued the procurement. So that would be October and 4 months after that.
That's correct.
I think what we're saying is we want to get started sooner rather than, right? So we're saying that
we're talking about a year. We wouldn't visibly see this for a year. So might we want to find the money now so we can get started now rather than go through the whole budget cycle?
Well, how about if we just back up from October 1st, essentially, and so whatever time frame we need to start now to get to that point so that when the funds are available October 1st, we're ready to roll. So, if that point is next week, we'll just get started next week with getting the ball rolling. Does that sound good?
That's what I would prefer. So I'd like to do this part of budget cycle, and so let's back up as you suggested, and let's get started. We don't have to spend any money before October 1st, and I think there's a lot of support right here. So,
quick question,
yes, Mr. Chair.
So I know a lot of these utility boxes in the city. They're in the city. They may not necessarily be our property. Some may be properties of the county. Some may be properties of FPL. And some of our telecom utilities. Procedurally, in order to do this, do we need to do any sort of agreement with who owns these boxes that perhaps we can start working on in advance of this?
Yeah, the recommendation would be, again, to identify which ones are city-owned. That would facilitate for us to fast-track this project. If we were to then start adding county, FPL, there are also maybe around 250 if you count all of that. And it would also be more than $50,000 if we were going to go that route. So I recommend that, again, we work with Public Works in identifying which ones are city-owned.
And just on 41st Street?
That is our recommendation. We think it's a neighborhood that could use some enhancement, and that way we can keep moving forward towards more to the North Beach area.
Can we recommend perhaps at this body, I'm not a voting member, but this body, when we're looking at 41st Street, I see it as a corridor, so it's 41st Street, 40th Street, and 42nd Street. Is there kind of like ancillary to 41st Street? And just, I put that out there to my colleagues for consideration. those are my comments.
Yeah, I think when I heard 41st Street, I assumed it was that area.
Yes.
So,
I'm a Commissioner, Chair, if I may, so just with a couple friendly amendments to the motion, first from Commissioner Fernandez, absolutely requesting the administration look at 40th, 41st, 42nd. And if I understood the recommendation from our CFO, we would not spend the money till October 1, but we will back up from that date, do all the work needed. We can start that right away if needed, and then the funding comes in place October 1, assuming approval at the budget. If I heard that right, I will amend my motion to indicate that.
Yeah, and I'm going to second that. So let's do that. The other thing is I think we're talking about city assets so that we don't have to worry about, you know, that's another pilot program trying to deal with FBNL and county assets because we'll obviously have to get their approval. So I think, Commissioner Arriola, unless you have something else, I think we're going to close this item. Commissioner Minor, anything else?
Yep.
We're going to close it?
It's good. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much. Let's close the item. Commissioner Samuelin, you have item 7 on technology jobs.
Sure, I'm happy to introduce it, and maybe if Raquel's still with us, she'll help. Really, this is a discussion item, and again, an area I think we're making some good progress. Miami Beach United, I think, commented that they appreciated the progress we're making. They had some thoughts. I'm going to let Raquel, who I think has had a discussion with them, sort of talk about the three specific areas they had, what your thoughts are, and what action, if any, we need to take today.
Sure. Thank you, commissioners. So the administration received the MBU resolution about tech jobs in November, and we immediately, in the spirit of collaboration and wanting to, you know, have a greater relationship, we reached out to MBU's leadership to have a discussion about the resolution. So there are three basic elements, in my opinion, from the resolution. The first is that they are recommending that the city refine its approach to targeted business attraction to focus on tech silos or sub-industry groups, including resiliency tech, sustainability tech, tourism tech, things that align with the city's brand. And on that count, we think that there are opportunities to do so through our branding, through our marketing, through our outreach and public relations. We don't think at this time that we should primarily focus our efforts just on those areas, since our tech ecosystem isn't as well-established and recognized or even coordinated. And so we don't want to send the message that we are focused on certain tech companies, but we are welcoming to all. However, we do see that there are opportunities in our messaging where we can try to hone in on those groups that would align with the city's brand. On the second point of the resolution, it talks about a collaboration with the SIM Group, Society for Information Management, the South Florida chapter. MBU's asking us to collaborate with them to gain insights on the tech industry, and we think there is an opportunity to do that as well. Specifically, we had a discussion with the commission and with finance about development of a business leadership group or task force, and we think that SIM could be helpful in this regard. Perhaps a representative from SIM could be part of this this task force to give us greater insights on the industry and what we could do to promote growth in that area. The third component of the resolution talked about the city taking leadership in driving policy and creating collaborative programs and messaging for the entire region. And on this this point, I think that it's a little counterintuitive for the city to take that approach, especially due to our partnership with the Beacon Council, the official economic development organization for the county, utilizing resources to focus on a regional approach and regional messaging and outreach, I think, would not be the best use of our resources. And with our focus on trying to get the Miami Beach message out, I think it behooves us to leverage our relationship with the Beacon Council to take on that regional approach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Raquel, for that helpful summary of sort of the three concepts. I'm going to sort of respond, and I think my thinking is very much in line with yours, and then, of course, welcome any of my colleagues, and if anyone from the public or Miami Beach United, maybe they want to chat as well. So, number one, I think it makes sense that we continue to refine our focus on tech. So tech can mean a lot of things. There's some in the business community that think everything is tech. So we're not everything. And I think you're striking the right balance when you say we, of course, are open to all types of tech, but there may be certain verticals within tech that we are especially well-positioned. And I believe the ones you started to talk about, resiliency tech. You know, if you're in the resiliency business and you have solutions for sea level rise, what better place to be than Miami Beach? Tourism tech. If you have ideas and technologies related to tourism, there's no better place to be than here. We've already talked about digital currencies, and I think there's a whole lot of reasons and activities going. So I think this is, to me, number one, which I support that item, is really about honing in, focusing, placing some bets in those areas, but not excluding others. So that I do support. I think that's in line with the way you described it. Number two, I think we should take a meeting with SIM. I think there's no reason to do that. It's not a financial commitment. I think we should do that. And I agree with you. I was just at the Beacon Council yesterday. I think they should really be more the leaders. We should continue to harness the relationship. So I'm in line with sort of the administration's perspective. Welcome comments from my colleagues or the public.
And Commissioner Areola,
okay.
Would like to
Commissioner Areola.
Yeah, good item. You know, we want to try to attract jobs and businesses here, so for sure I'm supportive. Yeah, generally speaking, I'm not a big fan of the Beacon Council and similar agencies. I just find them to be, you know, even slower than government and, you know, really self-serving organizations. They exist to exist, and, you know, they don't typically bring jobs. I'm very familiar with these folks. I mean, even locally with our own chamber here, you know, two nights ago, we had a big meeting, very important, potentially transformative project to build Class A office space here in the city. And they were noticeably absent, right? And, you know, ostensibly they're about trying to promote commerce and jobs and things for Miami Beach, and they're silent on the issue. And so, you know, I prefer us going it alone or with, you know, different type agencies than these, you know, quasi-government bureaucratic agencies. I don't think that's the best place for us to spend our resources or time. That's just my opinion.
Commissioner Fernandez.
I have a question. Because I recall, and I don't know if we do this, I'm not sure if I've seen this done here in Miami Beach. I know from my time at the county, there were these target job industry tax credits, I think they were, where the Beacon Council would go out and identify companies that would want to come. In this case, it was to areas of Miami-Dade County. Sometimes it was in municipalities. And these companies would come in. They would develop a piece of real estate in part because of the ad valorem that would be generated from the development of this real estate to bring this company into that facility. The county would give them some incentives together with the state. Is that something that we can do here locally to help attract some of these companies?
So the Beacon Council manages the evaluation of potential incentive awardees. It's offered through the county, but the Beacon Council evaluates and makes recommendations to the county, and then the county facilitates the incentive. So that's absolutely something that we have at our disposal. There's nothing that would stop a company from utilizing that incentive along with any incentive that we have, along with any incentive that the state offers. So these incentives can be packaged together as a way to amplify the offerings from each of these entities, the state, the county, and the city. Now, one thing to be clear about is that we do not financially contribute to the Beacon Council as a city. Their budget is largely coming from business tax receipts and a portion thereof of those fees. And so we have access to their resources, but we do not directly contribute financially to the Beacon Council.
Yeah, I think we can sort of wrap this up. And I'll frame it in the form of a motion just to, you know, bring clarity that, you know, on item one, we accept the notion of laser focus on certain verticals in tax, and we've given examples, but not in any way excluding other opportunistic opportunities. That number two, we accept the recommendation to take a meeting with SIM. I will just... And that's the extent of my motion. Just a comment on the Beacon Council as someone who serves on the board. I think there's a couple things I'd say. One, we don't want to slow down our efforts, and I don't think we're slowing down at all. I think we're full steam ahead as a city, and we're going to be proactive, aggressive. At the same time, Raquel was clear, we're not paying anything incrementally. The taxpayers are funding the Beacon Council. They are the economic development representative for Miami-Dade County, and we might as well get our fair share, and we might as well tap into that asset. So I appreciate my colleagues' thought that they could move faster, do more, and we can continue to push that. But I want to make sure that we're tapping into it because they are working for Dade County. I want to make sure that they're spending time in Miami Beach. That's just my comment, and I am a member of the board, so I have some firsthand. I literally was there most of yesterday morning making some headway. But that would be the motion I'd make. But, Raquel, you look like you want to add to that.
And I appreciate your active engagement with the Beacon Council. I think it's very important to build the relationship that we have. Now that, you know, we're sort of in the clear, I hope, with COVID, the Beacon Council is going to be doing a lot of recruitment visits, and they have invited the city of Miami Beach to participate. So oftentimes they'll go to New York and have a list of companies that, you know, they'd want to visit, and they'll ask, you know, delegates from various cities, and the Miami Beach team could be a part of that recruitment process.
Okay. So could you just – I think you're – motion was very general, but just please restate it.
Sure. That we accept MBU's first recommendation to provide laser focus on certain verticals in tech, illustratively, I think, picking up on the administration, resiliency tech, tourism tech, digital currencies, and that we use special opportunities such as Bitcoin 2022, the Aspen Institute, to really dial them up, but not exclusive of other tech. So that was number one. Number two, I think Raquel said she's going to take a meeting with SIM. I think that's a good idea. That is the motion.
Okay, I think you've got agreement with that. So, John, you have everything you need. Legal, you have everything you need. Let's close this item. Commissioner Arriola, good morning. How are
morning.
You?
Good morning. Nice to see you.
You have item one on the Barclay. Let's tee that up. Go ahead.
I'm not sure who from the administration is going to help walk us through. So this is a question I have. It's a city-owned property. We've owned it, I don't know, for over a decade, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah. And the question is, you know, what are we doing with it? And then let's hear the answer. And then the question to my colleagues is, what do we want to do with it?
Right. Good morning.
So good morning, everyone. Elizabeth Muro, Assistant Director of Facilities and Fleet Management, for the record. So we have evaluated the Barclay from a variety of perspectives, considering its historic structure and its location in the heart of the Convention Center District. Previously, we have issued two requests for proposals, which failed, looking for workforce housing in this area. However, following that, what we did is that we conducted an appraisal of the site. It's currently valued at $8.3 million. We believe that this is significantly undervalued for this property. Following this, what we also did is that we conducted a feasibility study. And given the location and what the structure itself, the feasibility study indicated that the rooms in there would have to be combined in order to meet zoning requirements. So with that said, considering the site of the location, what we're considering, or what we're recommending, rather, is that this be subject to a formal competing process.
What?
Formal competitive bidding process.
For what? A sale?
To sale.
Okay.
Good questions?
So walk us through, you know, why haven't we been successful in the past, you know, I'm sure we're all going to jump in. You know, what are our options? You know, short of selling is an option. The other thing would be if we don't sell it and we were to do some conversion, and I'll just throw things out there, you know, make it a tech hub, you know, for an incubator, make it artist housing. There's a lot of things we could do with it. It's a gorgeous structure. It's right across, you know, from the convention center. And it's an underutilized city asset, and I'd like to see us do something with it, activate it in some capacity. You know, why haven't we been able to do something with it in the past?
One of the reasons, well, in terms of the RFPs, we did not receive any responsive bidders.
Which because we are, and I remember, but refresh my recollection, those RFPs were for workforce housing.
Correct.
We didn't get responses, presumably because they couldn't make the numbers work.
Right, that's okay. Correct.
Yeah. Is a building, we bought it and we had to bring it up to, not up to code, but it was an unsafe structure.
It was an unsafe structure.
It's safe now.
It was red tagged.
Right.
In 2014, I believe it was.
But we made it safe. Yes
it's
or no?
It's currently boarded.
So it's not safe.
It's not safe.
So
it's
we still
boarded.
Have to come out of pocket and make it safe.
Right.
Okay.
It's nearing 90 years.
Do we have a ballpark on what it would cost to renovate? No?
No.
Okay.
But we can certainly research that.
I think the number's a lot. But
the number's going to be a lot. So high. It would depend on what we want to do with it. I mean, how many units could we get out of it if we wanted to bring it up to code?
So currently it has 66 units. You would have to combine the units, so maybe half of that.
So 30. Wow. 30 units. I start doing some ballpark math, you know, yeah, $100,000 a unit to bring up to code. That's $3 million right there. And then we'd have to rent them out and make that money back. That's, if you give me some time, I can see if that even works. But, okay.
Colleagues? Daniel, you're sitting there. I bet you have a thought or two on this.
It's okay. I was just going to mention that work from home is a very popular thing in Miami Beach. So to the extent, a lot of the technology jobs are people here now that work from home. So I hope that can continue to be part of the process. As far as this question, honestly, I haven't reviewed it that much. But I did want to mention to Commissioner Arriola that there is a variance allowance for smaller rooms, which whenever these smaller hotels get renovated, they go to get the variance so they could keep the rooms in the size that they are. So I understand that the city was talking about that, but that is an option. But it does look like you guys need to find some other ideas too. But the hub sounds interesting.
Yeah. That's your big idea. Go find some ideas.
I mean, I wish I had an answer.
Give us some thought, because you know it bothers me that the thing's been sitting there for almost 10 years.
Yeah. Give us some money, actually.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, I wish I could do that,
Commissioner Samuel. Well, I think
Daniel has money. We're going to let him stay up there. Now, good discussion, and I too am intrigued by Commissioner Arriola's notion around a tech hub, maybe some shared workspace, something like that is intriguing. But for me, and I'm picking up on the administration's recommendation to recommend a formal competitive bidding process. So conceptually, I'm supportive of that. As I think of uses, I think, again, a tech hub, some shared workspace is very intriguing, especially some of the conversations, huddling with our CFO about other ideas and just notions. You know, it is next to the convention center. I'm not a huge fan of expanding hotels, but, you know, if there was a location that could lend itself, that should at least be a consideration. And then I tend to be bullish on long-term prospects for Miami Beach, which lends me to think more P3, something we can share the upside as opposed to an outright sale.
Okay. Commissioner. Colleagues, what's your appetite to at least test the market just to see, put an RFP? Mm-hmm. You know, we can always reject it. My thought, and I wasn't going in this direction, but now that I think about it, let's test the market. $8.3 million to buy. What's the FAR? What?
Saying that's incredibly undervalued.
It's incredibly undervalued. But I'm saying if I was a businessman, if I were to buy that as my office, $8.3 million, even if I have to put in several million to renovate, that's a pretty good deal. Yes. So, yeah, I'm sure it's worth a lot more. You know, maybe one of these companies that are moving down here would like to make that their headquarters. It's across from the convention center. Mm-hmm. So why don't we test the market?
So I am certainly open to that. I think that value is incredibly low. It's an amazing property. I'd love to see it redeveloped. I hate when I'm at the convention center and I look out the window and I see that property in distress. So I think there are a lot of things and a lot of reasons why someone would want to be in proximity to the convention center. So I am certainly open to testing the market. I think that costs us nothing. I also would be very excited. There was a lot of discussion about workforce housing or some other type of lower income housing possibly being used there. I don't think that's the best use of that property for that purpose. But if we test the market and we are able to, if we decide to sell it, and that would be a decision of the commission, then I would be very supportive of taking the proceeds and putting it for that purpose. Because we definitely need more workforce housing in the city. So, Commissioner Fernandez, you have your hands up. Go ahead.
Yes, and just a quick question. When was this appraisal conducted?
It was conducted, we requested it in June 12, 2021, so shortly right after.
Okay.
It's fairly recent.
Should we request
it? What? His house. You could buy his house.
I'm just looking at it, right? You could buy it, you know, with the money people are spending nowadays, $20 million and renovate it, and that's a house. That's a heck of a house.
Would it be appropriate to request an updated appraisal?
Let's just test the market.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Let the market.
Yeah, God, I don't really want to spend the money doing that because we'll get that. If we test the market, we'll get an appraisal, right? Because someone's going to see. So if that is in the form of a motion. What about this, colleagues? What about let's make a recommendation to test the market. Let's send it back to the commission because we would need approval there and see what our colleagues on the full commission think. And but that would be my preference, Commissioner Ariola.
Yeah, I love your idea about taking the proceeds and, you know, it's subject to the full commission and make this workforce housing, because I could see one of these tech bros coming in here and buying a 28,000 square foot building for $20 million. It's a bargain with 10 parking spaces on, you know, 0.7 acres. It's kind of wrong to create more luxury housing for a gazillionaire and then not take some of that to make it for, you know, more accessible for the less, you know, financially able. So I do like that idea.
So if that's a motion that we would, we'll send it to the commission with a recommendation to test the market, see what we have. And also I think if we're in agreement that we would also recommend that if we do sell it, down the road, that the proceeds would be used for some sort of workforce housing or low-income housing or some variants of that.
And Mr. Chair, so by testing the market, you would mean to issue a formal competitive solicitation?
That's right. That would be the recommendation of this committee. I think, is that okay with you, Commissioner Sandler?
It is, and just to be clear, you know, that could be in the form of a P3, right? Someone may want to do something, and absolutely, with that, I second and support the motion.
Absolutely. Okay. John, do you have everything you need? Okay. We're gonna close this item then. And thank you, Commissioner Ariola, for bringing it, because Sammy, I think you are here. Come on. I give you a 10 o'clock time certain. We're 2 minutes early. I hope that'll be okay with you. Let's see. Let me just make sure I want to call the item number. I think it's item 10. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. My name is Sam Gonzalez. I am CEO of Young Musicians Unite. We are a nonprofit that believes that every child deserves access to a free music education. Our current impact is 29 schools across Miami-Dade, 3,000 students. Here at Miami Beach, we are a partner with the STEAM Plus program since inception. We work with four of six of your schools with a 1,200 student impact since the inception. I am here to talk about the Miami Beach Rock Ensemble today. This is a 50-year-old institution founded in 1972 by the late Doug Burris. It is a gem to this city, and it is the first high school rock ensemble in American history. And I'll continue to say that unless someone contests that. About the ensemble, a practice at Miami Beach Senior High. The students are from Miami Beach Senior High School. It's an after-school program. It is the culmination of the highest excellence of our students. We work so hard every single day to teach music education from elementary to high school, in school, after school. And this is the premier, most professional youth ensemble that our city has to offer. We have auditions to be in the ensemble, but we also have a stage tech crew. This is a vocational crew. of students who learn how to build sound systems, break them down, do live mixing, do live sound, and they support our 20-show series for the Miami Beach Senior High Rock Ensemble. If you have seen anyone who's playing in a band locally, they know someone that's been in the ensemble, and the ensemble inspires thousands of students and residents in our community through their performances. We have alumni such as Amber Marks, who is now working with Beyonce and Jay-Z, someone who graduated just a few years ago, to Adam Chester, who is the piano player of Elton John and his head lead band master. Over the years, we have 1,000 students that participate in the ensemble. Over 300 are working musicians and sound engineers in the professional industry. Over 600 performances, both locally and nationally since inception, with 90% of the graduating seniors receiving full ride scholarships to college. I was born and raised in Miami Beach. I come from Miami Beach. In fourth grade, I saw the Rock Ensemble perform at North Beach Arts and Culture Day. That inspired me. It made me want to pick up an instrument for the first time with Miss Medic, who was there to this very day in fifth grade. And that changed my life. I couldn't afford music education growing up, but I was able to get free music education from the city of Miami Beach through the school system. In high school, I met Doug Burris, who founded the Rock Ensemble, and I was able to be in this ensemble that inspired me to pick up an instrument in the first place. If you fast forward now, 36 years old, I own 2 recording studios. I lead one of the largest music nonprofits in Miami-Dade. I own the Wynwood School of Music, and I've come back to take over and to direct this rock ensemble for the last 4 years with the passing of Doug Burris, who started it. And it means the world for me, and it means the world to advocate for these children to ensure that they're able to perform and to play all over the community. Current stats, we do about 20 shows a year, 12 on Miami Beach alone. We had about 12,000 residents that we reach through performance and inspiring students to pick up an instrument to work with them. We headlined a youth music festival, which has thousands of people in attendance. The audition slots this year, there was 50, and we had to add another day because they filled up. So many kids wanted to be a part of this ensemble. And Young Musicians United has invested over $20,000 in gear since we started. And something really cool is that we're turning 50 years old this year, and on May 28th, we have the 50th anniversary concert, which we're bringing 120 musicians from over 50 years to come and perform here on Miami Beach, and we're partnered with Miami Beach On Stage for that, so thank you. And I am here to humbly ask for a match. I am here to ask this committee to support the city, contributing an annual recurring dollar-for-dollar match of funds up to $30,000 from the city of Miami Beach. Would Young Musicians Unite continue to fundraise and cover the rest of the funds year over year?
Okay, thank you for coming. I'm generally supportive of the item, and I appreciate it. I love it when I hear the words match, because I think most people around here know that when you come and ask for a funding request, I ask how you're going to participate in that as well. So, John, I'd like to hear from you in terms of timing and availability.
I need clarity myself on what timing is. Are we talking about, because we have the school year also, which is a little different than our fiscal year, so maybe Dr. Rosenfeld could help us here. But in other words, is this a mid-year budget amendment essentially for our FY22 budget, or is this an ask for the FY23 budget process that we could earmark kind of in advance like we did a prior item here? So I think that's what I'm trying to sort out.
Okay, so Sammy, you don't mind if I call you Sammy, do you?
That's what they call me. You can call me Sammy David. Or Sammy.
tell us what your ask is, and then we'll contemplate and decide
what
might be.
My ask is for an amendment to the budget. You know, this program, I've been taking it over for 4 years now. It is very expensive to run at the level that we're doing it. We do 20 productions a year. We are playing all over. The 50th anniversary is not cheap to run that, so I'm looking for an amendment.
So we are almost halfway through our budget year. So would that, you're asking for $30,000 this fiscal year, which is 6 months, and then you want a recurring, you want another $30,000 next. So colleagues, Ricky.
Yeah, so I'm fully supportive. You know, what you do is amazing work. This is, to me, a high return on investment for our city. I mean, you've proven yourself time and time and time again. You know, it's become part of the Miami Beach brand, particularly with, you know, young adults and teenagers. And to the extent that we can have longevity on this, and thank goodness you're a young man, this will be something that just grows every year. And, you know, Miami Beach already, but certainly in the future, will have this amazing reputation for developing young artistic talent. And so, you know, it's not a lot of money, high return on the investment. It goes right to the community, right to our children. So I'm fully supportive.
Is that a motion?
It is a motion.
Okay, I'll second that motion. Commissioner Samuelin.
No, I too am supportive, so we can vote by acclamation.
I think this is an amazing program. This is what a great way to spend money for our youth, really, as an activity. And so this is an important investment in our community. So show the three of us are joined in our voices that we want to recommend a budget amendment in the amount of $30,000, and the item will. I know John looks at me when we amend the budget because we hate doing that, and I'm not a big fan. But this is something we can do and we can afford to do. We're blessed that our resort tax revenue and so forth is has gifted us with so many visitors coming to support us. So we're going to move the item back to the go ahead,
Sammy. Let me ask you a question. if I ask you to challenge you to think big, which I'm doing right now. What more might you need to sort of take your program to the next level? And what I'm thinking about is more capital dollars, infrastructure. You know, I'm not sure where I know where you perform, but I don't know, you know, like at Beach High or elsewhere. You mentioned music studios, a performance space, things like that. You know, if you want to come back to us with a wish list of what that might look like so that you can kind of even kick it up to the next level. Because, you know, I don't want to see the bottleneck become lack of space, lack of equipment. Because I think, you know, with what's going on in our community, you know, whether it's the city or our efforts to help raise money, there's money out there with families. And if they see that there's an organization that will be good stewards of those investments, parents with money will want to fund a piano, a mixing board, a recording studio, all of that. And, you know, you've got my pledge, and I'm sure all my colleagues, to help you find places that will house your students. So if you want to come back to us at some point or just reach out to me with a wish list, I'll sign up to help you with that.
Thank you for that. I'm a dreamer, so I will come back with that wish list. It's not a problem at all. We want to step up the vocational aspect of what we do to stage tech and all of that, but that requires technology, and technology is ever-changing, and that requires more money to have better lights, better sound system and everything. So in the space and all of that, we can come back to that. So I will be in touch.
Okay. Sorry. I know DJ Irie, and I'm sure you do as well. He has something going as well through Big Brothers Big Sisters. With it's more not necessarily Miami Beach specific, but – Not to have overlapping agendas, but you know, if there's something that he's already doing that we can leverage, that's just an idea. But I'm sure you have your own resources.
Yes, we've met in the past. We've talked. So
yeah. Okay, right. Let's close this item then. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
So we're going to move this back to the commission at the next commission meeting with a favorable recommendation. Let's bring up item 13 on the pouring rights. I think we've got our city staff here. Item 13, discussion of requirements for pouring rights contracts. And I will recognize Melissa, you and your team. Go ahead. Matt, are you going to present?
I have to recuse myself on this.
Mr. Ariola will recuse himself.
I'll step out. Okay. I have a conflict. I have a business relationship with a subsidiary of the Coca-Cola Corporation, so.
You may not need to, Commissioner. This is a discussion item, not on necessarily brands, but what we want to see on the contract as a whole. So,
no, I think you should recuse, Commissioner.
Yeah,
you have consistently on this issue over the years.
That's why I'm not a lawyer.
Go ahead, Matt. You're recognized.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Commissioner Samuelin, Matt Kenny, Assistant Director of Marketing and Communications. So this item came from the December 8th commission agenda when we were looking at proposals that we had in our hand, and we ended up withdrawing the item and taking the proposals back because we had moved forward with the mindset of finding the best financial business case for the city. After speaking to several community groups, residents, we heard overwhelmingly as well from the elected body that sustainability and plastic-free initiatives were very important. So we went back out to all of the potential vendors and said, you know, we need you to come back with a plastic-free model, show us what that would look like. And so basically this discussion item was the proposals have come in. We are not in a position to make the recommendation today because we wanted to hear what does the perfect proposal look like. Right now we're looking at all plastic free. As a result of all plastic free, the numbers have come down in terms of sponsorship cash just because of chain supply issues right now on metal and aluminum. So I just wanted to get cohesive yes across the board that we're good to move forward with plastic free, knowing that some of the dollars are going to come down in the proposals.
Okay, so let me I haven't studied all the proposals, and I understand you're not in a position to make a recommendation today.
Right.
But I understand that we have two offerors, and both of them made a substantial progress towards plastic free. I know that in my communications with them is something that I told them that I would not support any pouring rights without that. So, but when we say plastic free, what I told them, because there are some third-party brands that they handle that are not quite there yet in terms of aluminum. So what I told them, at least my view, was that I wouldn't support anything that was not was plastic-free in terms of water and sodas. But I had a little bit more flexibility with the third-party brands. It's my understanding that they've gotten actually much closer to that than I anticipated. So I am very, very supportive of the plastic-free initiative. I think that this is a real opportunity for us to send an important message, not just in our local community, but statewide and nationally, that we're making this. Quite frankly, if we had not gone in that direction, I would not be supportive of a contract, and even if that means we lose a little bit of revenue. So that is at least my view. I am flexible on the third-party brands. I think some of them, support some other brands in terms of through their supply chain. And so it would be my hope that the goal would be to get 100% plastic free, but with those third-party brands, if they need a little bit more time to get there, I would be flexible on that as long as they can make a commitment on all the water, which I think is 40% of the market now, and also the sodas. Commissioner Samuel.
Yeah, no. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to our communications team for listening to the community, responding, and trying to find a win-win-win here. The perfect proposal maximizes economic value and is the ultimate and does perfect by our environment. We know we don't live in a perfect world, so there are always some trade-offs. I think my colleague raised a good potential trade-off where, for the dominant items such as water and soda, we would, be a little more strict in that adherence, but maybe some of the smaller items we would do different. And I guess my question to you is, are there, as we talk about plastic-free, are there other specific nuances or issues that you all are dealing with? We want to give you guidance. So besides maybe the flexibility on smaller brands, which I support, is there anything else that you're seeing that we could sort of help you draw that line?
Not necessarily. I would say to both your points that they're pretty much full plastic-free at this point, which is great.
Okay.
The only thing we're seeing is, as a result, the price point is higher. Because the price of aluminum is higher. So that will eventually get passed on to the families and the communities that are purchasing this. That's, the toss-up of plastics versus aluminum. So the only thing that we need to keep in mind is that if we want to go completely plastic-free, the end user will likely pay more for the product.
So to that point, that may or may not happen. So, and I understand that one of the proposals, there was some sort of pricing error that's being corrected now, so that needs to be corrected. There's in the marketplace, there is a price point that people will pay for a bottle of water, and so what it may mean is that some of our vendors that are required to use this contract because of their relationship with the Senate may have a slightly smaller profit margin, and I can live with that. So Actually, I think once the correction is made on, I think there was an error on the water pricing.
Right.
Once that correction is made, I think that the pricing will be more in line. But we do recognize that the cost of the product, not the market price to the end user, but the cost will be a little bit higher. But you know, this is an effort that we see in other communities. So, for example, Dolphin Stadium now is plastic free on this and using these products. So I'm very, very supportive. So, Commissioner Samuelin, if you will join me, what I would like to do, city staff is not in a position to make a recommendation right now, but I'm ready to move this back to the commission. Because you know we'll need to have the full body look at it, and so if you're in agreement, let's move it back to the commission without any specific recommendation, and let the body. But I think we are giving the guidance that we are prioritizing the sustainability and the plastic-free initiative, and that is important for us. How do you feel about
Agreed.
That? Okay, so Melissa, anything else on that? Do you have what you need from us?
Just, yes. Mr. Chair, so without any recommendation?
So, well, what we've said is we recommend that we are prioritizing the plastic-free initiative, okay? But in terms of, we have two offerors, and the city staff is not in a position today to make a recommendation one over the other, and I'm not going to opine on that until I hear a recommendation from staff.
Thank you. I just wanted to add on the record, the isotonics is the portion where there is plastic, but we can talk about phasing in aluminum, you know, as the years go by.
Right. Yeah, no, I know there's going to be a little bit of that over time, and I think we have some flexibility there. So we're not saying 100%. I think we are saying 100% on water and cola product, you know,
That's
soda
correct.
Product. We are saying that.
We are saying that.
So do you have what you need?
Yes, yeah, so it is a recommendation to prioritize the plastic-free, but without any recommendation as to any specific proposal.
Exactly. Plastic-free as it relates to water, it's our recommendation that
water.
We would not award a contract to anyone that is not plastic-free on water and soda products. And once it gets back to the full commission, I think by that time, can you be ready by the next commission meeting?
We can.
John, do you have everything you need?
Sounds great.
All right, let's close the item. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and then we can ask.
Yeah, Ricky, where's
yeah,
that?
Let's get Commissioner Areola. You are welcome to join us once again.
Maybe look at hay on the noon under
here. I'm trying.
Let's see.
I'm trying.
Keep going.
There he is.
I'll give you a kiss.
Thanks. You bet. Commissioner Minor, are you still with us? I know you have another meeting, but can we call up your item number 2?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And I'll briefly introduce this. Really just wanted to take a look at as we have our tree canopy design. One is that we have projects that are going to remove palm trees and relocate some palm trees, and there's obviously a cost involved in that. Also, a significant amount of palm trees don't survive that removal, so we'll have to get new palm trees to replace those. But also, as we look to add shade trees, which, again, I am fully in favor of, still preserving the palm trees, we don't need to get into that, but fully in favor of adding the shade trees. But they also have own environmental and sanitation costs, because certainly nutrients from falling leaves that, if they do get into the stormwater drains, can cause environmental issues. So just wanted to have that discussion and really understand what the costs to the city are as we make changes to our tree canopies.
Okay, is there someone from, good morning, from the city? Good morning, how are you?
Hi, good morning, Commissioner, and good morning, everyone. Just here to give an update. I know this item's up for discussion. We provided some information to staff to the committee to be able to oversee. As it is right now, as far as the costs associated with the leaf litter and the maintenance costs, it's very difficult to parse out the litter component or the leaf litter component from some of the maintenance that we do as far as street maintenance, cleanup, and things like that. at this time, you know, it's already factored into the operation, so we don't see any additional costs associated with the planting of the trees. We also have landscape contracts in certain right-of-ways and parks, which address tree maintenance in that area. So that's something that, once again, you know, we don't see that much of an additional cost associated with the planting of that. As it relates to the cost of relocation and removal of trees and palms, as far as part of construction, the Urban Forestry Master Plan, once again, is a guiding document. It doesn't dictate, you know, the removal of trees and palms. It's talking more about how to expand the urban tree canopy to improve our tree canopy benefits and tree canopy coverage. Construction, of course, unfortunately, impacts trees and palms, and we have a tree preservation ordinance in place right now, which first preserves and protects our trees and palms and assures proper mitigation and expansion of our tree canopy. So we don't, you know, we have some numbers that CIP was able to provide, but that's essentially where we're at right now. And I'm here to answer any questions, technical questions you guys may have related to this discussion.
Okay, great. Commissioner Miner, I see in the briefing book on page 131 there are some estimates there, so I don't know if you had any questions about that or comments, but I recognize you.
Yeah, thank you. I guess one follow-up, if Omar, thank you for that. I assume the leaf blowing, though, is under sanitation, is that right?
Leaf blowing? There's different departments that use leaf blowing. Sanitation is one of those that use leaf blowing. Our landscape contracts also use leaf blowing as well. That's an operation done by either parks or public works.
Right. Tell me if I'm right. My understanding is that, like, for example, by Flamingo Park, where there are some obviously beautiful shade trees and what have you, there's a lot more, at least what I've been told, is there's a lot more resources that go into the leaf blowing there, rightfully so, to mitigate the leaves going into the stormwater drains. Is that accurate?
So when we had discussions with sanitation, the leaf blowing is, you know, of course, yes, it's picking up the leaves, but it's also picking up litter and other debris, which is something that's a part of the contract in that area to keep our streets clean. So it's difficult to parse out what portion of that is actually leaf litter, what portion of that is litter, garbage, and other debris in the area, but it's all associated into the same contract. So, you know, once again, the addition of additional trees in the area or additional trees throughout the city, it's very difficult. It's not going to impact that contract as much. It's the same operational maintenance costs.
Commissioner Samuel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Miner, for sparking this discussion. I want to sort of hone in on the issue of leaves and their impact on drains. So I'm going to read a quote from a resident, Ms. Valerie Olin. She says, "When 16th and Bay Road floods, I go out with a rake and clear the drains. The water goes down." She commented just coincidentally in the last 24 hours. So she says that she has a rake and she has to go out and clean this. So my question is, what data do we have as it relates to the frequency of drains being clogged by leaves, and what data do we have in terms of the impact that has on flooding?
So that's probably a better question for Public Works Operations. Right now, they currently have a very extensive drainage cleanup system, probably one of the most extensive that I know of in the area. So it's, you know, that's something that I think it would be better answered by Public Works.
So I remember last month, I think it was last month, or maybe it was at land use, we had a discussion about, from Public Works, about how frequently they clean. But someone here from Public Works Commissioner, we should forward that to Public Works, that specific site,
sure,
and ask them to check it out. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Rodney Knowles, Assistant Director.
Yeah, Rodney, I don't know if you caught it, but the specific site, because I think that's a good suggestion. It literally happened last 24 hours, 16th and Bay. So could you just comment on this issue of the leaves clogging drains, frequency and impact, and do you know anything, or would you please take as a follow-up what's happening at 16th and Bay?
Sure, I'll start backwards. I could definitely follow up on that site to see if there are any extenuating circumstances that are unique to that location. As far as leaves clogging up drains, between sanitation cleaning the streets and landscape contractors cleaning the adjacent landscaping, we catch a lot of that debris before it happens. Unfortunately, there will be times where, especially if the leaves, the surface area is large enough, they could get together and prevent or slow down the flow of water into the drains. That's usually an easier cleanup, so it doesn't go into the system and cause any long-term problems, but there's still a robust cleaning system in place for the actual pumps and the infrastructure that collects that water that's being flushed from the street. So in the long term, I think we're doing a great job from what I've seen, but there are instances where occasional clogging will happen, but it's not as pervasive as you'd like to believe.
Yeah, no, and just to close, I appreciate the follow-up. I mean, I was sort of struck that the way this was presented, and, you know, I look forward to the facts that this is not like a one-time occurrence. She has got a rake, and she's heading out to do it. And I worry about when we have high rain events or other circumstances where we got flooding, if that's all happening when the leaves are there, that just gives me concern. But I appreciate the follow-up. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and can you forward that specific information to Public Works, and then if you will follow up on that specific drain and with the resident and maybe find out if we need to get a new rake there or if we need to be doing something differently with that specific drain, that would be helpful. Okay,
Mr. Chair, I just clarified that's a private rake.
No,
public rake.
Exactly. Commissioner Minor. Is there anything else on this? It's your item.
No, thank you, Chair. I think we can close it out. The memo had some useful information, which is helpful. I have some follow-up, but I think I can more appropriately do it offline.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us today. So we're going to close this item. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Commissioner Arriola, you've got item 9. Let's talk about 41st Street.
Okay, great. I like this idea. I want to see how you all feel, and if Commissioner Minor is still on, definitely want to get Commissioner Minor's input on this. This wasn't necessarily my idea, although I like it. I know Mayor Gelbert is very bullish on this, and more importantly, the 41st Street Committee has recommended this and asked us to explore it. So I said I would sponsor it and put it on the agenda. So I don't have a big dog in this fight, but it does seem to me that, you know, 41st Street is a, you know, major corridor for us, and, you know, it services, you know, a wide swath of our community. But it was developed, you know, I don't know how many decades ago, and a lot of the, you know, property there, you know, probably needs to be repositioned. And some of the insight from the 41st Street Committee is, well, if the city were to sort of program it, particularly with Class A office space, that might make some of those properties more eager to, you know, reposition themselves. And they've sort of asked us to explore the city being the catalyst through a development, particularly for Class A office space, but there are other options. And so I thought it was a good idea and worth exploring here. I know in the past many things have been looked at, including, you know, bringing a Publix to 41st Street and other ideas. City owns a lot of property, particularly surface parking lots along the 41st Street corridor. And so, you know, how do we activate those assets to bring new life to the 41st Street corridor? So that's the discussion for today.
And I think it's a terrific discussion for us to have. I haven't been as plugged in with the 41st Street, I think the Business Association, but do they have a recommendation? They're favorable, or they would like us to look at it, or?
I don't want to speak for them, but I know that they're, I'll just say, bullish.
Okay.
And encouraging us to discuss.
Commissioner Samuelin, I don't know if you have a Commissioner Fernandez. I'm very supportive of seeing what is possible in that corridor. I think we should take the temperature, or perhaps even go so far as to do what we did with the lots that are north of Lincoln Road and invite people to give us a proposal so we could contemplate. You know, the other thing we just talked about the other night, Wednesday night, in the commission is what we will do with those properties. And we got a number of proposals, and we're looking at potentially moving forward. But one of the concerns that the commission had was the congestion if we move with too many projects in one area. So if there is an appetite for doing this type of project, it might be better, since it's in a different area, right, rather than doing two or three projects at the same time or in an area to share the wealth, if you will. So I would be very supportive of moving this back to the commission and seeing if there is support for us to do invitations for proposals on what somebody would do. I guess what we would need to do, colleagues, is either identify specific lots that we would want the commission to look at, or we could leave it open and just say, you know, we could do something like what we did with, I think it was Lincoln Lane. Commissioner Fernandez, you look like you've got something on your mind.
Well, I'm very supportive of conversations to attract Class A office space to our city. I think we all support this effort to diversify our economy and be less reliant on the tourism industry, which is just such a dangerous position to be in, as we learned from COVID. And I do also believe that 41st Street is a diamond in the rough, so much potential and opportunity for this district. I want us also to be very cautious, because the neighborhoods abutting 41st Street, there are single-family neighborhoods, and I live in one of them. The quality of life has deteriorated significantly. We've improved, I think, in a lot of areas, and this city commission that we all serve on in previous years has done a lot to improve quality of life through parks and other efforts, but there's one area that is being affected is traffic. This single-family area is clogged. Is being suffocated. People cannot leave their homes, their driveways, for hours in the afternoon. If I try to leave my house from Chase Avenue in the afternoon, it can take me over 5 minutes just to be able to come out of my house in the afternoon. So I just want us to also be cautious of that in doing this. Somehow, if anything moves forward with this, that we put protections in place to keep this traffic going into the residential areas, if we ever do anything with this, and that we engage, the neighborhood to the north and to the south. We need to push progress, and I think you guys have been a great champion of that, but we have to be just very, very, very mindful that with these office spaces come cars and come other activity. It's positive activity, but it does come to a little bit of a detriment to the quality of life.
Let me ask question is, because I know there's a lot of problems with traffic right now, but is that primarily due to the construction project, or is it going to be just as congested after?
It's been something that's been accumulating over time, gradually over years. It's been getting bad. It's been getting really bad. There's times that we have traffic on Prairie Avenue back up from 41st Street all the way to 34th Street. We have traffic that backs up from Chase and Alton all the way up to 34th Street and east on 34th Street to Sheridan Avenue. So this is an area where during certain hours of the day, peak hours of the day, especially afternoon drive time, it's really bad.
Commissioner Samuelin.
No, my thoughts are very much in line with Commissioner Fernandez, and I am going to support action as outlined by the administration. I believe a request for a letter of interest, I think, is a prudent move. But I think his comments are related to diversification of the economy is prudent. And, you know, we had Irma, it seems like a long time ago, there's a thing called Zika. We occasionally get hurricanes. There's a lot of things that make tourism a bit of a roller coaster. So I think this strategic diversification makes sense. Also, I like the word cautious. I think when we do big things, sometimes you have to crawl before you walk, before you run. And what I would like to make sure that we do, as early and as often as possible that we highlight the concerns about traffic and maybe get the private sector thinking about that early and often. But we don't exclude infrastructure impacts. We don't exclude parking. And I never think we can communicate enough with our community. So I have great respect for the 41st Street Committee. But there are other neighborhoods. For example, we just had the Nautilus Homeowners Association, and that might be another constituency. Just to get the word out, get feedback early and often. With that said, I will move and support the administration's request for issuing a request for a letter of interest, noting the opportunities, but also some potential considerations by this body related to traffic, especially infrastructure, parking, and a request that the administration communicate appropriately with the community on meetings that are already happening as we speak.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, understand there's someone online.
Yes, Mr. Gadinsky, who I believe is or was the chair of the 41st
Street
Committee.
Okay, let's bring him in. Mr.
Hello?
Gadinsky, you're recognized.
Can you
Go
hear
ahead.
Me?
Good. Yes, good morning.
How are you all?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, that required an answer. Thank you. It wasn't rhetorical. So, yes, thanks for listening to me and taking this issue up, which we something that's very important to the committee. Yes, I am no longer the chair. I termed out last meeting. It is now in the very able hands of Yehiel Cement, who is going to do a great job. But I am still on the committee, and I am still a resident, by the way, who lives just down the street and experiences this traffic you mentioned every single day, and it is bad. It's definitely part of the discussion, no question about it. But there's also the counter argument that creating a more dense urban environment might have the opposite effect, because it isn't just bringing more people in. It might keep people from actually having to leave to go home at the end of the day if they're working on the beach going somewhere else. So there's the counter argument, but of course that needs to be studied. A couple of other things. I also think, to make the street a world-class street, which is part of our task as a committee, requires a bit of density. There's not enough density. And those lots, which do serve a purpose, of course, for parking, don't serve much other purpose. And I think that they have a better life in store for them. Two things. I wasn't sure you could clarify if the 4,000 Chase lot is included in this, because I've been pushing, as some of you know, to have that also studied as well. There's been a lot of interest in having that property be more than it is, basically a waterfront surface parking lot. We believe as a committee that housing is a critical. I think a lot of the reason we're seeing this traffic is workers can't afford to live on the beach and are coming. It's a rush hour in the morning. It's coming on and going home at the end of the day. And if we create some workforce housing along that corridor, I think that will also be a positive in terms of traffic and also just good for the city. Also asked if maybe you would expand the RFP to not just be the Class A office, but also people interested in doing a mixed-use project with some residential, specifically workforce housing type of residential. So that's it for me.
Okay, thank you, Seth. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, you have a few other callers as well.
Okay, let's bring them in. Give them 2 minutes each.
All right. Mr. Cement. Go ahead, Mr.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning. We can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. First of all, thank you so much to the commissioners, and thank you to Commissioner Arriola for sponsoring this. But just to echo, what Seth was saying, and I live it every day, there's obviously a traffic issue, but I think that, really helping to diversify the city economic drivers, bringing in office use for an area that right now doesn't have it, or have much of it, I think will go a very long way towards truly revitalizing that area. If you look at kind of what an inspiration might be, you can look at what was done in Sunset Harbor, which really, in my mind, should be kind of the model for the city. But we think that, bring in office, hopefully it could be expanded to also include residential,
that'll really start to get people on the street. And if we can include, you know, certain qualifications in the development, I think we can also be really smart about how to, I guess, promote more efficient transportation uses as well. Like we're doing a development in Atlanta right now. I think what they're doing is really smart, where, you know, you have certain benefits that are awarded to you if you, you know, have bikes or you have scooters, or you kind of do things to promote people from getting out of their cars and really walking the street and really just participating in the streetscape more than anything else. So I appreciate your support and each of your support, you know, up until now, hopefully that continues. And if there's anything else that we can do, you know, for information or advocacy or whatever it might be, more than happy to do it. But I can tell you that after speaking to, you know, many residents and certainly feedback that we've gotten through the 41st Street Committee, it's definitely something that we feel will take 41st Street to the next level. So thank you so much, everyone. I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but I unfortunately had a meeting in Brickell. I have to be there.
Thank you. We appreciate your comment. I think you've got somebody else.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Jacobs.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm Robin Jacobs, founding member of the reinvigorated 41st Street Business Association, past vice chair of the Mayor's 41st Committee, and a 30-year plus resident of Miami Beach who cares deeply about 41st Street. I'm also speaking as an immediate past chair of the Chamber of Commerce, and I'd like to forward to this committee a resolution that we passed while I was chair in support of Class A office space throughout the city. Esteemed commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning and thank and recognize the commissioners on this committee for their past support for Class A office space in other areas of our city. And I want to thank you, Commissioner Ariola, for supporting this today. As you know, Class A office spaces are the most prestigious buildings competing for premier office users, and they have a definite market presence. 41st Street is a prime central location for Class A office space, as has exceptional accessibility and as the gateway to Miami Beach. Class A office space on 41st Street will serve as an economic engine for our neighborhood. From a resilience perspective, Class A office space will offer our neighborhood more options where people can work. From a business development perspective, it will activate and upgrade our street. Miami Beach's concept of work, live, play would come to fruition in our neighborhood. Unfortunately, right now, the options for office space on 41st Street have not been upgraded in 30 plus years. This much needed improvement will increase foot traffic, upgrade our retail space, reduce congestion by affording our residents the opportunity to work in their neighborhood where they live, and bring new life and energy to 41st Street. I urge you to vote and to recommend to bring a further discussion to commission. And as Commissioner Fernandez indicated, 41st Street is a diamond in the rough, and it's really time for 41st Street to shine. Thank you so much for this opportunity and for all of your support.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, great.
That's it, Mr. Chair.
Let's bring it back. So I'm very supportive of this. I actually believe it is a diamond in the rough, and I do think that we have more opportunities for more density in terms of Class A office space and also residential. We might be able to keep cars off the road because people could work right there in their community. So, Commissioner Fernandez, I want to get the staff, and do you have you identified specific parking lots that we would actually look at in terms of seeing if there's any interest?
There are six parking lots, city-owned parking lots, that are adjacent to 41st Street. Five of them we feel could be explored further. There's one that is adjacent to residential areas and quite small, and we don't think it would be the most appropriate to include this parcel. I do want to highlight that the recommendation for the RFLI stipulates that we'd like to issue this in fiscal year 2023. I think there's some benefits to this. We want to get through the potential Lincoln Lane referendum item because that will impact perhaps the level of interest from the development community, and it'll give us some idea of what we're going to introduce as inventory into the Class A office market. So we don't want to go with the RFP right away because we won't know what we actually need if, you know, Lincoln Lane comes online. So we want to be very strategic and methodical in this, And like Commissioner Samuel mentioned, you know, we do want to have that community outreach aspect to it. For Chase, I know the city attorney has some considerations in reference to a referendum. So that lot, I think it's P60, adjacent to the Roosevelt Theater. That one would have some implications.
That's right. The 4000 Chase Avenue lot that Mr. Godinsky referenced, it is waterfront parcel, so it would require, if it were to proceed to an RFP and get approved, it would require voter referendum approval. The other lots would not require voter referendum approval. It would be, under the charter, it would be a 6/7 vote of the City Commission to approve a long-term lease or sale of those lots. And the one thing just on this RFLI, just to be very clear, it is not an actual procurement. It is, you know, to get industry feedback to lead to an RFP, just to be clear.
Exactly. So one of the things I want to bring into the conversation is we're talking about Class A office space because that's where the discussion really started. But I don't know how my colleagues feel about it, but as part of some sort of RFLI, I would like to invite people to tell us if they would be interested in a mixed use, because I really think that there's a place for residential as a mixed use with class office, because again, we want to keep people out of cars and we want to keep people in the community, and I think we want to make it a little bit more dense in appropriate areas. I believe the 4000 Chase, it's a smaller property. It is in more proximity to private homes, but I believe that particular lot could be ripe for workforce housing. You know, so maybe not a residential, I mean, not Class A office space, or it could be maybe mixed use. So I don't know how my colleagues feel, but I would like to put that one on the list because, so I would like to kind of expand this to say not just Class A office space, but Class A office space and residential, some sort of mixed use, because I'd like to see what the proposals might look like. I don't know, how do my colleagues feel about that?
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, I had a meeting with one of our largest employers, and they're having challenges keeping their employees in the city. They just can't find housing. And then they try to do corporate leasing. They go even to downtown, try to get space for corporate leasing to house them. They can't get corporate leasing. So anything that we can do to get that workforce housing, I'd be supportive of. And I'm very open to this. If this is going to elevate 41st Street, this is one of our major corridors. I just think going into it, whoever responds to this RFLI should know of concerns like this, because maybe they can be part of the solution as well. And I just feel sometimes when we do these things, then we tell them afterwards. We as a community come in and say, "Oh, but traffic is horrible in my community, and your project is bad because it's going to affect my quality of life because of traffic." No, it's better to tell them from the get-go, this is an area where we experience some traffic challenges, and maybe you can help address some of this as part of your proposals.
Mr. Chair, so yeah, I had I think captured some of Commissioner Fernandez's points, and we talked about community engagement. So I believe there is a motion, and I would gladly accept the your point about mixed use residential being a consideration, because we want to hear from the marketplace. So I will incorporate that to the motion on the table.
Commissioner Arriola.
I support your comments and just want to make sure that we're giving staff the right direction. You're saying office space and workforce housing or residential housing, it's and or, right? So, like, basically just opening it up to the development community to tell us how they might.
Yeah, I don't want it to be limited just to Class A.
I agree.
Because I think what we're trying to accomplish there is keeping people in the area, and so a residential may be part of that solution. I mean, there's not enough density to support restaurants and things like that, right? So that's what I think we should invite people to do. Do you feel
that's
like
the point right there? We complain about 41st Street not having restaurants and not having these activities. Well, there's no daytime activity. Why? Because, you know, there's no people, you know, living right on 41st Street or working right on 41st Street. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
Do you have enough from us?
Yes, we have direction. Thank you.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to send this back, I think unanimously, we're going to send this back to the commission, right, to... with a favorable recommendation that we issue an RFLI. I don't know, colleagues, how you feel, but I don't know why we would hold this until next year. Is there any reason why we would not go ahead and send this back to the commission and ask the commission to let us put an RFLI out? We're not going to award, you know, we're not even going to put an RFP out until next year, but I'd like to get the process rolling. But how do you feel about that?
Well, I think that perhaps our current endeavors with Lincoln Lane could impact the level of interest. And so if we're going to use the RFLI as a barometer, you know, of what the market would like to do and the level of interest and demand that there is, I think the Lincoln Lane project could be a variable that impacts that level of interest. So I don't want to set the RFLI up for failure in terms of how many responses we get because there's uncertainty with what's happening with Lincoln Lane.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let's. I'm not sharing that concern. But let's get it back to the commission and let's have the conversation
good
there
idea.
And see. See if there's interest in going ahead now or holding it up a few months. But let's. John, do you have everything you need? All right.
Yeah.
Let's close.
I agree with you. I'm a little bit more aggressive. But you have an excellent point. I just think we'll talk about it at the full commission. Obviously, just disclose it in the RFLI that you know. The city is considering, and there's a bid out for development of office space of, you know, up to.
And to add to that, there are also concerns with staff capacity. We are pouring everything into Lincoln Lane right now, and, you know, I don't want to weaken our efforts there in preparation of an RFP for 41st Street.
Okay, sure. Great. Item's
thank
closed.
You. Thank you. Great job.
Commissioner Ariel, you have item 12 on the FTX Grand Prix. Let's tee that up.
Okay, I think we have some folks here that will tee this up. We discussed this at the full commission, and I think we had you know a favorable disposition to do something to you know help you know roll out the red carpet for the F1 event that's coming up in May, and we've got some folks that want to talk to us about the city sponsorship of an event or series of events are going to be having here in Miami Beach. So that's what I think you all are going to present.
Good morning. I'm going to cue it up. So this is the FTX Grand Prix Festival on May 6th through 8th, 2022. This is a fantastic opportunity to bring another marquee event to the Loomis Park ADCD district. To clarify, the FTX Grand Prix Festival is a separate entity from SFM in the Hard Rock with the race. So I just wanted to clarify that before we begin. The FTX Grand Prix Festival is asking for city sponsorship in regards to help them with their programming. They are proposing to have large-scale LED screens on the beach. It's a free event for the community in order to be able to stream the races, and it's inclusive of all our tourists and Miami Beach residents. They're also they will also have a village similar to Air and Sea where there's going to be demos. They're bringing Formula One race car teams to have panel discussions. They're also proposing a F1 car parade down Ocean Drive, which would be really amazing. And what they are asking is city sponsorship for fire, police, parking in an amount of $235,162, and also special event fee waivers in an amount of $140,585. So the total sponsorship request is approximately about $375,747 for this event. We have with us today Mr. Fred Porro from Wasserman and Mr. Alexander Stojanovic from Function representing the FTX Grand Prix Festival.
Best question.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay, so of the $375,000, how much is cash and how much is in kind?
The hard costs are $235 for the fire, police, and parking.
$235?
$235,162.
And the rest are just fee waivers?
Yes.
Okay. And then ballpark, maybe, John, you know the answer, ballpark. What do we do for, like, the Super Bowl or Orange Bowl, other major events sort of potentially at this level?
I have that information as well. Great. Yes. For Super Bowl, we do $400,000 plus a waiver of and special event fees of $178,250, and we do a convention center rental waiver of $857,540. For college national championship, we do a cash sponsorship of $400,000, plus we do a special event waiver of up to $50,000. So to show you in comparison.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yep. Okay, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You're recognized. Why don't you, I've got a presentation here. I assume you're going to go over all or part of that. And I would just ask you to, it's my goal to finish this meeting by noon. And I don't want to fail in my first meeting as the chair. So with that, I recognize you and would love to hear from you.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. My name is Fred Porro. I'm Executive Vice President of Wasserman, whether it's second largest sports and media agency in the world. Our chairman is Casey Wasserman. He is chairman of the LA 2028 Olympics, and I'm here today to discuss our event with you. I just want to make sure that we put it on record that our event is in no way, shape, or form associated with the F1 Miami Grand Prix. We are working closely and exclusively with our client, FTX, and the Mercedes F1 team to deliver this event. What we're trying to do here is create a community event. We know that there's going to be projected over 300,000 people coming into town to see the race. And what we're trying to do is create a community event that's inclusive, open to the public, that allows all these people, and most of which won't have an opportunity to go to the race, an opportunity to engage with the activities that we're creating, cultural activities that are inclusive to all genders and all ages, a family event, and also an event that actually gives back to the community. We're fully committed to giving back to the community across many different initiatives that we're working very closely with the Economic Development Department and the Communications Department of the City of Miami Beach. We're also working very closely with the Sabrina Cohen Foundation to make sure that we provide donation in funds and computer to the Sabrina Cohen Foundation. We're providing the City of Miami Beach a branded foot space within our festival to make sure that we're able to support them in communicating and promoting their city initiatives. And we're also capturing data at our event, data that is very valuable, data that we're willing to provide access to the City of Miami Beach. So I think, you know, as Wasserman has worked across the world in over 75 countries in producing events similar to this, we're very committed in making a positive impact to the community, and we're willing to do this not only for hopefully this year, but the years to come. And, you know, Wasserman has a foundation called Wasserman Foundation that commits and donates tens of millions of dollars to things like education, arts and culture, health and service. And so as part of, in conjunction with Wasserman Foundation, as well as our clients that are involved in this event, we are committed to giving back to the community as far as this event is concerned and creating a legacy piece. We want to create excitement for the masses that are going to be coming out to this event. Everything that we are doing, we're doing in conjunction with our partners, which is FTX, Mercedes F1 team, which, by the way, are the reigning world champion, team champions, and their driver, which is Lewis Hamilton, which is the most successful driver in F1 history. So everything that we do at the event, from all the experiences, all the activities, and everything that you see on the screen will be approved by them and the team. So we're fully committing to make sure that all the programming and all the activities that happen on the stage and on the screen are things that we work in conjunction with them.
Let me ask a couple of questions, if I can. So, first of all, what's the timing of this? When are we talking?
So currently, our event is scheduled to take place between May 6th and May 8th.
of this year. During the daytime between 12 and 6, our event will be open to the public and non-ticketed event. And then at nighttime, we plan to produce a music concert between 8 and, say, 11 o'clock. That will be a ticketed event, mostly to make sure that we are able to manage footfall and be able to keep the residents and our guests safe.
And the race, do you call it a race?
It's the race will take place.
That's going to be at Hard Rock, right?
That will take place in Hard Rock, but we're not associated in any way, shape, or form with that race. So, yeah, we're creating our own event with our own teams. It's on the same weekend as the race itself. We know that on average, from data that we have recently pulled, most recently from the last Grand Prix that took place in Austin, which is the U.S. Grand Prix, that over 300,000 visitors come into town. On average, they spend approximately $2,100 over the weekend, and hotel bookings increased by over 105% from the previous week. So basically what we're doing is we are just making sure that we're trying to entertain and putting on an event that's associated with our clients and our partners that is able to entertain those people that are coming into town as well as your local residents.
So you're not associated with the race itself, right? So it's a completely different. Absolutely. You're just providing an experience, if you will, here. Because you assume that certain people will be in town to attend that event.
Correct.
And you want to expand their opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. Hence why we've provided you all the data as far as what previous cities that have hosted a race, the economic impact that those races have brought to the city, all the data is around the number of visitors that come into town, the hotel bookings. So basically, these are people that are going to expect and want something. And we are fully committed to actually putting on an event of the caliber that you are expecting, and also in a location that we feel is the most premium location in all of Miami,
Will there be a competing organization such as yours in Miami or around the Hard Rock that, you know, are you guys going to be fighting for people to attend your festival versus some other festival?
I think there's going to be a lot of activities happening around the city. As you know from Super Bowl, there was quite a bit of events happening all out at the same time, some of which are from our competitors. And so for us, it's just, you know, we want to make sure that Miami Beach, more specifically, is currently the focal point of some of the best activities that happen around the race weekend.
Okay. Commissioner Harrell, go ahead.
So I think to help people understand what we're dealing with here, because I think there's going to be some pushback from my friend Brian May and the folks he represents, and it's going to create some controversy up here in the dais, and I don't want us to squander an opportunity because we don't understand what we're dealing with. Educate us, indulge me on F1, the popularity just over the last few years. Yeah. Go ahead and brag about the folks that you represent. We all know who FTX is. You know, we're all fighting to bring crypto here. They obviously have a massive investment in the arena across the bay, and Mercedes-Benz. These are your two primary clients. There's blue chip as blue chip. Okay. Why don't you also tell us a little about Wasserman, yeah, your leadership team, and who we are dealing with, yeah, okay? Because I don't think we understand what you're talking about here.
Okay. So personally, myself, I've worked in Formula One, directly with Formula One, with team partners for over 20 years. So all over the world, I've worked with Formula One. I've seen the sport.
This is the hottest sport in the world right now.
Currently,
would you agree with that, Brian? Don't think, I know for a fact some of my colleagues, not necessarily the ones up here, don't know what this is. And so they'll find out in May.
They'll find out in May.
They'll find out in May. And I encourage you all to watch.
We want to be ready for that.
Yeah, and so there's no sort of equivalent to say this is a Super Bowl and you represent the Dallas Cowboys, but you essentially represent the Dallas Cowboys even on steroids, because right now it's two teams that are vying for. So you're either Red Bull or you're Mercedes-Benz. You're bringing, yes, Mercedes-Benz.
Correct, and their team partners.
Of the hundreds of thousands of people that are going to be here, they want to go experience the Mercedes-Benz experience.
Correct. If you think about it, the buzz around, and we work
with every major league, sporting league, pretty much in the world, NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, Major League Soccer. We represent over 2,000 athletes. We represent over 2,000 musicians. We produce on behalf of our clients, both of which are brands, sponsors, and both and properties as well, events all over the world. And I'm telling you right now that the hype around what's coming in May, which is the pinnacle of motorsports, is bigger than Super Bowl. And we're asking the city to support us to get
and
ready.
And more global, international. And more, it's more global.
And it's and yeah, to really think about it, it is actually more global. So the you know the viewership numbers for Formula One is 1.8 billion. So it
with a B.
Compare that to a with a B.
Well, I'm just saying the people that are attending, they're coming from the Middle East, Asia.
They're coming from all over the world.
Yeah,
all over the world. On average, with the 300,000 and we project. Working very closely with our research and insights team, we project that the number of people that are going to be coming into the race this year is going to increase the average of that, coming in from all over the world. And this is a very affluent audience that they're here to have fun. They want to be engaged into the types of experiences that we're bringing to them, working with them with the best combination in Formula One history, which is Mercedes F1 and Lewis Hamilton, which is an 8-time world champion. And their partners, which include everything from luxury brands such as IWC to our client, which is the fastest growing crypto exchange or was considered the fastest growing crypto exchange in 2021.
Okay, so let's hear from staff. And do you guys have a recommendation?
I just want to state for the record, in addition to the financial support, they are asking for a multi-year agreement exclusive of Ocean Drive and Loomis Park between 1st and 15th Streets, inclusive of the beachfront. They're similar to they want a clean zone similar to a Basel zone, and the closure of Ocean Drive between 5th and 15th Street for the duration of the car parade that I mentioned earlier. In addition, Mr. Poro mentioned working with our Communications and Economic Development Department. We have not fully negotiated that, so we would like to definitely go back and meet with them and finalize the city's ask.
That closure, the request for closure, is for a one-time, or is it so it would be hours as opposed to days? Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Commissioner Samuel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm intrigued by this opportunity. I've had a couple times to hear a little bit about it. Couple things. First, by memory, I think I heard that the Ocean Drive Association had some communication, maybe was supportive. Do you know what is the status of dialogue with the Ocean Drive Association? Did they officially support this? Are they objecting? Are they somewhere in between?
I do not have that information, Commissioner.
Okay, let's take that as an action. Okay. I think they're really an important stakeholder. I think I heard they were supporting.
There was a letter that was sent from SESI, from Ocean Drive Association, to all the commissioners about support.
I think that's what I said it by memory. So, Lizette, maybe we could just, you know, because the conversation's expanded since then a little bit, make sure we're engaged with them. They are a critical stakeholder in this process. The second thing I would say is, and I picked up on the word, Lizette, you said about the city and sort of community ask. One of the things I like about these partners, besides the brand names, is their willingness to do right by our community and to put a lot of things forward. So I want to make sure before we vote a commission that that is explicit and that any asks and requests that we have are sort of fully baked in because, you know, it's good news for the providers, it's good news for the community and the city. I'm always someone that likes to try something to see how it goes. I'm willing to support this today. What I would think might make sense, and we've done this in other contracts, do a one-year agreement with an option to renew. And if it hits it out of the park, if it's everything I just saw here, then yes, we can all feel great about it. But I am willing to support it today.
Is that a motion?
It is.
Okay, so, and I think you're supportive, and I'm supportive. Mr. May, you want to say something?
Absolutely.
Please step to the podium before we...
And I will say, I said it from the beginning even to these gentlemen, I don't want to do a multi-year deal. Yeah. Let's try it the first year.
I feel the same way.
You know,
I'm supportive.
And I don't know how that impacts you. I mean, I know you'd like a multi-year deal, but...
If I may clarify on that after you're finished.
If you do a great job...
Yes. Yeah.
and we have a good experience, you pretty much can guarantee you're going to have a renewal.
The only reason I ask for, or I should say we and our partners ask for a multi-year agreement is we're making a very, very big investment in the millions of dollars for this event. And in order to be able to make that investment is hopefully we would like to see and be able to repurpose and see some sort of economies of scale over the following years. So if we're only getting a one-year commitment, then we're exposed, and there's only a certain commitment that we can then make for that first year. So, but I appreciate and respect your decision. And I think
you're going to knock it out of the park, and then we're going to want you back, and you're going to want to come back. Yeah. Mr. May.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Brian May. I'm here representing Formula One and South Florida Motorsports, who's the promoter of the Formula One Miami Grand Prix. I just want to put a couple things into context. Typically, as we have done with the city of Miami Beach, who's been amazing partners for other events like the Super Bowl, college football championship game, is typically there are official sanctioned events that take place in various facilities at the beach, whether it be Loomis Park, the convention center. And this year for Formula One, that is not taking place. Okay, we're not doing official sanctioned events from the local promoter, South Florida Motorsports, or Formula One throughout the community, because quite frankly, we have our hands full building about $100 million race circuit around Hard Rock Stadium, which is incredibly complicated and a very difficult task, and a challenge to get all that done by May 6th for a race. So the only objection that we would have is to a multi-year deal where you would lock in certain facilities of a very important city, Miami Beach, right, as an asset to the entire community. And so we would ask, and I want to just say for the record, Formula One, South Florida Motorsport, thinks the world of Wasserman, great operators, it's going to be a great event. The only thing we would want to make the city aware of is we would urge you, please don't preclude an officially sanctioned fan fest or other event from coming to Loomis or Ocean Drive in 23, 24, you know, through 30, which is really, that's the only request that we have. This is going to be, you know, this will be a top three race in the world in year one. In our opinion, this is Miami Formula One is going to be through the roof. This event will be through the roof. It'll be fantastic. So
okay, thank
we're
you.
Here supportive of the event. We're just concerned about locking in certain facilities for a long period of time and the city precluding itself from availing it of certain sanctioned events in the future. Yeah. That's okay. All.
I mean, the city is big enough where we can accommodate both Mercedes-Benz, Red Bull, whatever. But we still have to activate, hopefully, next year, you know, the convention center and Pride Absolutely. Park and things like this. My concern, I'll tell you, you know, that Mr. Ross will want to just keep this all for himself up at the Hard Rock Stadium.
Not at all.
Yeah. And so I want to tell you is give us some hope that, you know, in future years we will activate Miami Beach the same way we would for the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Because it's an expensive ticket, absolutely. And most people can't afford it. But we want our residents and all of our citizens here to enjoy the experience.
Absolutely.
So if we can do public activations free where people can go and enjoy the race on, you know, screens, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let me just address that. Absolutely, that's the case. In future years, Formula One will be here in Miami Beach with sanctioned events, as has been the case with Super Bowl, right, college championship games, you know, big soccer matches, right? All of that for sure will be here on Miami Beach because Miami Beach is a jewel, right, for the entire community and important to the event. The only thing I would say, though, is that the official events are not meant to preclude, right, events like this that pull in partners, race teams, right, strategic partners in the entire ecosystem of the event. It's really just meant to say, please keep options open in the future in terms of official sanctioned events, a fan fest that's a Formula One fan fest, right? I mean, you know, it's the FTX, right, Grand Prix Festival. It's titled that for a reason because it's not a sanctioned event. So, and there are no really sanctioned events this year because, as I said, it's really, you know, trying to build the circuit, get everything done in 12 months has been a real challenge. So that's
okay. No, we understand. We appreciate your comments. Thank you, Mr. May. Commissioner Samuelin, did you have any other comments?
I think we're in vehement agreement because we have a unanimous view to proceed with the 1 year. And if I heard Mr. May correctly, he actually thought that was a good idea. But what he added to the conversation, if I understood, is there's the opportunity in next year and subsequent to have officially sanctioned, maybe in collaboration, maybe, you know, to add to the party. So, Mr. May, what I would say first, thank you for that, and I would just encourage you to hurry up and bring those ideas so that we can see the best, because sounds like this is going to be good, that could be great, and we're going to have a wonderful 22 and 23. And again, I remain supportive.
I want to add one thing. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I agree with everything that Brian May has said. We put on a very big event for our client F1 in 2018, which was the F1 Miami Festival, which had over 100,000 people attend. And we would like to think that that event created the buzz that, you know, actually showed that the city of Miami was ready to bring on an event. All we're asking in return, and I agree with everything that Mr. May has said, is all we're asking is if it would be a shame for us to do all the legwork after the 9 months that we have put into this, work very closely with the city, commit millions of dollars to this event, and all of a sudden then it be turned over to someone else after we've done the hard work.
So I would say to that, because this body's not going to recommend a multi-year contract.
No, absolutely. I appreciate that.
I would say I think all of us recognize that when you come to the dance early, you're going to be a favored dance partner.
Thank you for that. We
appreciate the dance. What we're saying, we're not going to exclude anybody. But so I think we can move this unanimously back to the commission with a favorable recommendation as requested. Colleagues, is that okay?
Yep.
All right, let's close it out.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Areola, item six on arts and culture. Let's tee that one up.
Okay. Yeah. I picked real easy stuff to bring to this body.
And I just want to say that I know I didn't get this list until last night. So
me too.
So I don't. And I don't know how you feel if we might be able to bump this item, but it's a lot to digest.
Yeah. So I had the same reaction. I had opinions and critiques. But here's what I'll say, and however you guys want to do this. First of all, I want to thank staff and all of the artistic or, you know, cultural partners. You could see they put a lot of thought and detail into it, which I really, really appreciate it. And I went through the list, and, you know, I do want to vet it with my colleagues. There's some things I immediately excluded and some things it wasn't what I had in mind. I think it's going to be a lengthy discussion. So if you want to defer it, I'm happy to do it, and we should probably try to have a slimmer agenda so we can go through it. There's a lot to talk about there. And personally, I'm not in a rush to put it personally in the November election. So I think the rush was to, if we had the proclivity to do something, get it ready for the ballot. But, you know, with Lincoln Lane going down, I think it might be too much to put on. And I want to properly vet this. So
I am in total agreement with that. Timing is going to be everything. And since we just got it, it is very lengthy. And if you're willing, I would like to defer it. I would like us all to individually meet with staff before the next meeting so that we can discuss it individually, and then we'll bring it back. So with that, let's defer the item and bring it back to the next meeting. Commissioner Samuelin?
Yeah, if I could. We're in vehement agreement. I would request a briefing by staff directly on this item. I do also want to make sure that, and I understand the sponsor's interest laser focus on arts and culture. That's great. That's his item. I do want to continue to reiterate, and it was commission action, to have a capital planning overview of other capital needs so that we have the context when we make this decision. With that, I'm happy to hear at the next item, and I look forward to a briefing from staff.
Yeah, and with that, I thought that we directed them to, at the commission meeting, to make that a separate item. So that is a that should be on the agenda, John.
I think it's for the next meeting.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect. So with that, we're going to defer this, and then if you'll reach out to all of us individually, and let's get a meeting so we can. It's a lot to digest, and you guys have done a lot of work, and we're very appreciative. And so with that, we'll close the item, and we'll hear it.
I do want to reiterate an amazing amount of work in a short amount of time. I mean, there was
– That's why it's
got to – Yeah, and all of the cultural partners that responded, you could see it was well thought out. So I really do commend you for – and thank you for putting in the effort. We want to give you the courtesy of going through this with the same courtesy that you put forward in preparing your projects.
Perfect. With that, I'm going to call item 5. So that is that's an item I brought on behalf of the Committee for Quality Education regarding student safety and drop. Is there someone here from staff that's going to talk to that issue? This item was the QEC brought the item because of safety concerns with students being dropped off at Miami Beach Senior High and what could be done. So with that, Jose, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. Mr. Chair, we've been working with the school board and Miami Beach Senior High for some time now to try to develop a plan that will improve safety for children. What's happening quite often, every day, every school day, is that parents are dropping off children on the opposite side of Dade Boulevard, opposite the school, and then the students are having to cross, in essence, jaywalk Dade Boulevard to get to the school. So we've been looking for ways to try to address that. There's some land limitations, if you will, with school board property, county property. Dade Boulevard is under the county's jurisdiction. But we've had meetings with county staff, both public works and transportation staff at the county, as well as school board. And Assistant Director Josiel Ferrer can provide you a quick update on where we are on that plan.
Sure. Good morning, Josiel Ferrer, Assistant Director of Transportation. As Jose mentioned, we've been meeting with these folks. We did, just to provide just a brief history. Over the years, I think the city has taken a very, very strong approach to safety for the school. So all the improvements on Prairie Avenue, flashing beacons, the pedestrian flashing beacons for crosswalks at 23rd, all the striping, all the new signage has been done by the city, not by the other two partners in this. However, on Dade Boulevard, you know, with the issue that Jose mentioned, we've been seeing that safety issue, and we developed a plan in 2019. Funded by the city, that for a new drop-off where parents could essentially get closer to the school with a crosswalk and the students can go ahead and cross that. We've met with them, both the school board and DTPW, and they have endorsed the plan. Now it's an issue of money, of who pays type situation. So the two options that we have in this memorandum is one, we have developed an estimate of $525,000, which includes the soft costs. We have to take that funding or request back to the school board and DTPW to see if, you know, what level of partnership we can enact with them, and see where if the city will have any stake essentially in terms of providing funding to that. Or the other option, of course, which is less preferred at least by our staff, is for the city to fund the whole improvement. We feel that, you know, given that this is an issue that pertains to all three of us, we should at least have a conversation about sharing the funds. So that's the next step.
It's $525,000, and that's for, what, a drop-off lane?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so have you've had preliminary conversations with the school board and with the county?
Yes, sir.
Are they aware of the amount of $525,000?
We've talked preliminary about cost. However, we had not at that point when we spoke to them about 6 weeks ago, we had not developed a detailed estimate for it. We have done so at this point for an actual grant that we applied for this as well in order to perhaps help as a you know, to offset the funding, any funding shortages in the project. So we developed a detailed cost estimate, and that is a meeting that we have pending with them to share that detailed cost estimate and talk about a potential split.
And the grant, have we already applied for the grant?
We have applied for the grant. However, this is a Transportation Alternatives Program grant, so that typically goes into the end of the five-year work program in DOT. So realistically, we're applying for 2027, 2028 year.
But there may be opportunities to advance that those funds if we're successful in securing that grant.
Okay. Commissioner Samuel.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to staff for the presentation. Am I correct in assuming there are three jurisdictions that might want to see this happen and might want to share? That's the city, the school board, and DTPW. So we got three of us at the table?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So here are my thoughts. I think it's a great idea. I think we always have to put priority on public safety. I think we've heard from it. I think we should encourage staff to have the conversation, but my leaning would be, why don't we say we're willing to do our part? If my math is serving me correct, 525 divided by 3 is 175. I would be willing to support today, $175,000 commitment, so they can march over to the other two jurisdictions and say, we've got this money. We want to do this. Can you meet us as equal partners?
So I appreciate, is that a motion?
It is.
So I'm going to support that, so that I think that will give you more to walk into a meeting with. I think I would just slightly word it that it's a favorable recommendation of the committee, because we don't have the final authority. It would have to go back to the commission. But I think with a favorable recommendation, I would hope that the commission would support that. Commissioner Areola, are you okay with that? That way you'll have something to walk into the room with and say, look, we have a pretty strong commitment from the city that we'll pay a third. And then I would like to have our two other partners put up the other two-thirds. And so when can you have that meeting? Can we get that done in the next month or so?
We can get that done over the next week.
We work through Dr.
Okay,
Rosenfeld,
perfect. So,
but yes.
So let's go ahead and show that done, and then I want this back on the agenda for next month so that we can get an update, and then hopefully we'll have more news and we can send it to the commission. Are you guys okay with that?
Yes.
All right, perfect. And I know Ms. Edwards was on, but I think that her comments have been taken care of, so... is she?
She is not.
Okay, great. All right, perfect. So we're going to close this item out. All right, guys, we're doing terrific today. Let's call up Commissioner Samuel, and you have item 4 on pedestrian enhancements. Let's tee that up for
you. Yeah, sure. Happy to do so. And this is one that I think we've all shared some energy around. Commissioner Areola was the initial sort of sponsor and put this on the table. I took a run at it, and I think we found a couple hundred thousand, so we've got some money. Commissioner, Mr. Chair, you and Commissioner Fernandez recently sponsored part of it. So I think this body speaks in a unified voice. We want to get this thing going. So just to be clear what we're talking about, it's the South Beach Promenade. What a wonderful opportunity we have now. We've pedestrianized part of Ocean Drive. There's an alley that connects you over to Espanola East. That way area needs some work. You get yourself over to Espanola, and you can get your way to Lincoln Road in the New World Symphony. So as I think about it, I'd like to hear from staff. Most importantly, I'd like to hear, how do we get the progress going as quickly as possible? My own priority is in that Espanola East area between Collins and Washington. I think there's been some security issues. It's not beautiful at this moment in time. And I think what I would also like to add to the equation, and if we don't have all the answers today, that's fine, but is there a branding and communications opportunity? Can we put up signs? I'm not married to South Beach Promenade. That's the name we've used. And put signage and show people where they could go so that this actually has sort of, it's a destination. You can walk the South Beach Promenade. With that, I'd love to hear from staff.
Jose, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a project that we're very excited about. There's a lot of potential in terms of making that connection safer, more convenient for pedestrians and bicyclists as well. Again, the goal is to connect Lincoln Road to Española Way and over to Ocean Drive around the 14th Place area. We have engaged a consultant, Calvin Giordano and Associates, and Giano Feoli is here today to provide a brief presentation, commissioners. There is a lot to digest here, but I think this is a very important topic, a very important presentation. There's some key decision points that we need your feedback in order to be able to refine the concepts and very soon come up with a preferred option, preferred alternative.
Okay, let's get to the presentation then, and I'm going to again remind everybody that my goal is to finish this meeting at noon, and I don't want to fail on my first meeting, okay?
Absolutely, and good morning, Giano Feoli. We have an abridged presentation for you. Our goal today was to introduce the item to you. We're not necessarily asking you for making any decisions this morning. Because it's a very nuanced project with a lot of moving parts, I've offered to staff that if we want to just hear the item and then follow up with one-on-one meetings with each of you individually to sort of go through the more nuanced pieces, I'd be glad to do that. So if we can jump to slide number 7.
Slide 7, please.
There. So this is the scope of work. We're coming from Lincoln Road down Drexel, and then doing a hard east turn through Española Way, connecting to 14th Place out to Lummis Park. Next. So this project is really part of a two-phased approach. The first phase is a sort of pilot project, which is based on tactical urbanism that will lead into a more permanent improvement to create sort of a constructed Wunner for pedestrian type scale street for that project area. Next. And the benefits of the tactical urbanism is it's a very low cost, very temporary sort of pilot project. Next. That'll allow us to sort of test the ideas, but at the same time, we understand that the Zaskovich plan was adopted in concept, so it gives you some opportunities to sort of marry those ideas that get fruitioned out in time with the sort of improvements that we're talking about this morning. Next. Specific to Española East, we did traffic studies, and we recognize that even with the closure today, with the art installation that's there, the surrounding intersections do not necessarily see a reduction in their rating. So in the future, if we want to consider either a full closure or a partial closure, that is still on the table, and we don't necessarily see a negative impact with regards to traffic. Next. We can skip on next. Next. So from a big idea standpoint, the way that we're approaching the project is that we're recognizing that this might be something that could be scalable throughout the city in the future years. Next. So we're almost looking at this as putting together sort of a metro system, a kit of parts, so that it becomes an instruction manual that as new roadway sections come on board, there's always continuity in the project because there will be pieces that can be assembled together to carry this through. Next. Ultimately, the final resolution of the project will be something of this nature, which is much more of a pedestrian street. Next. Next. So some of the planning considerations that we're dealing with now for the temporary sort of improvements. We've done a full assessment. We're going to focus on Drexel because it's the most challenging of the sections. We've done a full assessment and evaluation of what's there. Next. We've looked at where opportunities are for the parking garages because parking is sort of one of the moving pieces that we're going to need some direction from you. Next. And we did a full evaluation through your parking staff of what the vacancies were either on a weekday or on a weekend and how that impacted a different parking. There's different strategies that we can go. We can either do no parking reductions, which essentially kills the project. We can do a 50% reduction, which is what we're recommending at this moment because we're bookended by the amount of money that has been allocated already. Or you can do a 100% reduction of parking along Drexel, which there's schools of thoughts that say if you do a full 100% reduction, that gives you the opportunity for the time of the pilot project to really understand what the full benefits of the project could be and what the full potential is for that experimentation period.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, maybe.
Yes, sure.
So I just want to pick up. So this is the Espanola to Lincoln connection. Is that what we're speaking of?
Correct, along Drexel.
And there are, of course, other elements of the project, right? Espanola, Espanola East.
Correct.
I just want to sort of clarify. I think I heard something, and maybe I didn't hear it right. Hopefully I didn't. But if we didn't want to reduce parking here, if that was not the will of our body, we could still enhance the pedestrian experience. We could still make it better than it is today.
You really only get 3 or 4 feet maximum in the paved areas. And then you have now narrower travel lanes, impacts on pedestrians, access to and from the fire department. It becomes very difficult. So that's what I'm saying. If you don't want to remove parking, then it essentially kills the project.
Let me offer, I have some concerns, right? Because I think that's going to be a concern. This is a really big conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like your suggestion that we need to have some individual conversations on that. So because this project is basically from Lincoln all the way to Ocean Drive, right? So initially I was focused on Espanola Way East. I want to kind of pull the conversation back there a little bit. I want to have this other conversation. I'd like to do that individually.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing before you have that conversation with me, I would like you to look at the potential of making that street one-way traffic so that all of the parking could be saved and the pedestrianization could be enhanced. Because that's what some communities are starting to look at doing, either as it relates to this experience or as it relates to harmonization with resiliency projects, is reducing to one lane instead of two lanes of traffic, so you have more space for harmonization or, in this case, pedestrianization. So I'd like you to look at the potential for that, because that street is not a heavy car traffic street, and there may be an opportunity. Mm. Is that something you guys would at least look at?
Yeah, we actually have. As a matter of fact, our proposal here is for a one-way, but we would actually – this is a pretty tough conversation, and we actually have been some options and some discussions that we've had with the private garages in the area and possibility of offsetting parking and things along those lines. But I think this is, as you suggested, Commissioner, and Mr. Chair, I think it's more appropriate for us to digest these ideas together on a one-on-one setting.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, because I think we're of the shared mind here on this, because I too want to focus on Espanola East, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have that conversation. I'm not saying there aren't some interesting ideas. I just don't want to lead with that. I'd rather do some things. We've been talking about this for a while. Let's get some wins on the board on other segments. And I am open also to the conversation one way, and so let me also request a briefing on this once we're at that point.
So what on Espanola Way East, I had an idea, and you actually had a slide on that showing traffic coming out of the alley, because there's a little special challenge there, different from Espanola Way West, because there are no alleys there, but... what is the opportunity? Can we move forward with Espanola Way East? I think I proposed one lane of traffic. What I'm hearing today is that there's no impact to intersections, so that is really good news. But there would be an impact to the alleyway, and I saw a slide. I think it may have been slide 7 or slide 8. What is the opportunity for us to move forward with that? And I think Commissioner Fernandez has joined in my item, and I know you had the item before that, with maybe making a plaza or a pavilion area on the west side of Espanola Way East. So let's speak to that.
So if we can go to slide 45.
Slide 45, please.
Slide 45, we actually have, at that point, we have...
There it is.
There. So at this point, we recognize that there is a need to have access from the alleyway eastward. So we are actually recommending that Española Way be a full one-way between Washington and Collins, so that that provides opportunity for the fire department to access those buildings in the event that there is an emergency. Particularly when you have a temporary structure that you don't have, a temporary improvement that you don't have permanent improvements to control traffic, it will require a temporary traffic control device that then would add response time to the fire department, and we don't want to do that. So if we go to the next slide, the suggestion would be to take the parking lanes and stripe those with the tactical urbanism strategy, demarcate a one-way travel lane, and then the northern half, which would have been the westbound traffic lanes, turn that and the parking into this sort of plaza condition that would run for the entirety of the length of the project. We did toy with some ideas about potentially closing the western half of Española, but again, because of the temporary nature of the project and what kind of instruments you would need to have there to control the traffic, we thought that that wouldn't be a worthwhile recommendation that would pass the muster of the fire department. Next. So some ideas of what that will look like is that that would then give you some opportunities to provide some activation, fit in some of your parklets that are already sort of part of your sort of toolkit that is offered to the restaurants, and similarly use that area in the way that you have right now with the cloud project to sort of promote an art and culture component. Next. So that ultimately this is what that will look like. This is looking eastward along Española, standing at the corner of Washington. Next. And just some real life pictures of what it is now, next, and what that could look like in the future, right? Now, this is a tactical urbanism component, which again is limited by the $200,000 budget allocation that we have. So if we are gonna look at this in concert with Drexel and in concert with 14th Place, then the only thing that we have money to do right now is limited to paint. If there's additional monies, then there is an opportunity to put planters and furnishings and different components that might turn this more into a destination. But given the budget constraints that we have right now, for the entirety of the project, is limited only to paint. I think I have a couple more options of views. Next.
Let me ask a question as we're going through. So Española Way Central and West both have the lane in the middle of the street. And so why is this lane not in the middle? Because it really is going to potentially afford more of an opportunity on the north side for activation. And I think the owners on the south side are going to say, why don't I get as much space for activation in terms of outdoor cafes like in Central? So is there a reason for that?
Yeah, if we can go to the next slide. The purpose for aligning the travel lane on the south side is because then you don't have to reconfigure any changes at the intersections. It's already sort of programmed in that manner. The benefit of not having it go down the center of the road as well is that now you've aggregated all of your space that you've taken back, and now you've increased, by doing that, opportunities to actually house some kind of cultural event or some kind of cultural piece there or activation. Keep in mind that even though we are showing a 10-foot travel lane, the fire department is requiring a full 20-foot width of unobstructed area. So when you put the travel lane in the center and add the additional 5 feet on both sides, then now you're eating away the opportunity for these spaces to be as flexible as possible.
Yeah, no, and I think I now understand why it doesn't have to always be this way. I think I really want to move forward with this as soon as we possibly can. What I think, you know, I remember 25 years ago, I could drive my Jeep down the Española Way Central, right, because the lane was open there in the center. And then, and it actually had a full curb at the time, and then it's been redone. What I would like to see, colleagues, is we move forward with this on that stretch of Española Way East with this modest change. Long term, I would like to see more money put into the project so that we could have it look like the central, if you will.
Mr. Chair, if I may, because I think we're of like minds on this. So we have $200,000 in the budget. If we said we really want to hit it out of the park, Española East, just to be clear, Collins to Washington, do we have a planning estimate to go do this just in that segment? What does that cost roughly?
Roughly, that's about $45,000, Commissioner, but that actually doesn't take into account some furnishings. So out of the 200 is for the entire project. This section alone of Española Way East is about $45,000. If we wanted to add some street furniture and things like that, then that we would have to take into our, we would have to estimate that. That I don't believe we have estimated at this point.
Right. So my position is, I believe in line with the chair's, let's nail this right away. Let's do this right. If we spend more than its fair share of the 200, I'm okay. It sounds like we're going to be okay, 45 plus some furniture. But I'd like to just do this, and then, yes, if we need to find additional funding, we're coming up to budget season, we can go after the others. But I think job one is to do this with the funds we have in place. Is that consistent with your thinking?
Yeah, I think I don't know how much furniture might cost. It's not going to be that much.
It's not as significant. Depending on what you do, it's a menu. But we'll go ahead.
So what if we give you $50,000 of the amount that you have? Can you get that done?
We'll take a look at it, Commissioner. I don't want to. At least the paint definitely done, and we'll look at. We'll scale the furniture to the funding that we have.
Okay. And so, John, Commissioner Ariel, are you okay with that?
Yep.
All right. Okay. So can we? Do we need to move this back to the commission? Or can we move forward?
I think because the $200,000 has already been approved, really just talking about how
I think you're absolutely right. So you've got the green light. We want to move on this ASAP, right? And then I want to have a separate conversation, as my colleagues may as well, on the bigger picture. So if you'll reach out to my office and get that set up, I want to talk about that. Hopefully, we're green-lighting it, and so I want to back on the agenda next month for a status report to see how close we are. Okay?
Well, Mr. Chair, if you may, the one last thing I'd just add, because I'm in full agreement, is that is next month, let's talk about the branding and communications around it, signage, whether we brand it with a name or we put wayfair signs, something to make this something people want to come see. With that, I fully support what you're saying.
And do we already have a contractor? Are we going to have to put this out to bid?
Typically, on these smaller projects, we do have contractors that are consultants/contractors that do this type of tactical urbanism.
Perfect.
We'll work with Gianno and his team as well to put something together in terms of art. The only part that we'll have to work as well with the art in public places to see, you know, because we just showed something here, but, you know, if there's another pattern that could be chosen as well, we'll take a look at that. But we'll have an update.
Let's get it done.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Yes.
So it sounds like you have budget authority, but I'm not sure if the scope has been approved, so it might be just a little more safer to just bring a resolution to the full commission accepting the recommendation to approve this specific plan that you're authorizing.
Okay, let's do it. Let's get it on the agenda for the next commission meeting. Thank you very much. Commissioner Ariola, item three, health and wellness.
Yes, okay. Couple of opening comments, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. John Rebar, who will walk us through what he and his team have been doing. So I think we've all been doing similar work in the health and wellness area. So what I wanted for us to do is to have a very comprehensive, year-long calendar engaging with hopefully local businesses, activating our parks, activating programming for our residents and our guests, and then with an eye towards really upping Miami Beach's brand as a health and wellness city, right? As we all try to reposition our city from the traditional sun and fun party city,
to really promote health and wellness as a lifestyle that our residents and our tourists come to Miami Beach to enjoy and experience, and to use our park assets and other assets to do that. And John has done a marvelous job. He and his team have done a marvelous job in doing that. He's going to walk us through some of the creative ideas that we already are doing. And what I want to see us long-term do is, have a robust, almost daily calendar where we've got major events going on, whether they're yoga in the park, fitness competitions, and hopefully even bring in, worldwide competitions, CrossFit competitions, this kind of thing, and really activating the city's brand as a health and wellness destination, and promoting health and wellness for all of our residents.
Perfect. John, good morning. Good morning. Yeah, still morning.
Still
go ahead.
Morning. Thank you, Commissioner, and I'll be brief because I know we're on a time crunch. But just to go over some of the things that we have done, we have a few tiers. A grassroots effort coming from the Parks and Recreation Department, looking at some mid-range or mid-level programming, but also taking a look at international and national types of events. What's happened so far is the grassroots coming directly from the department. We're doing yoga in three different parks for free. We have HIIT Fitness at Loomis Park on Saturdays. We did our first ever jingle jog in December. We had a free entry to our fitness centers within our community centers for the month of January to try to promote usage, and increase our membership. Did a step challenge with over 6 million steps recorded in our step challenge. We started a new competitive swim team at Scott Rakow. So there's a lot happening at that grassroots community level. Also negotiations, because it went out to bid, with a fitness programmer for fitness activities within Loomis. Again, that's going to be like classes, things like that. It's going to be community-based and visitor-based. The current Miami Magazine features health, wellness, and our beautiful park system. So there's a lot going on right now with this initiative. We're also looking at adding a beach cycling event, paddleboard yoga, a senior champion soccer program. So those are in the hopper from the department. At the same time, I'm in conversations with the GMCVB about sports tourism, looking at a really cool, hip, international volleyball event that perhaps could come to the city. That's a process, but that's in the hopper. Also working with a national producer about things like mud runs, sand challenges, obstacle courses, glow runs, cycling events, just a lot going on with that, and that's larger national, international scale. The timing of this meeting is perfect because the Parks and Recreation Department, our budget submittals are due today. And some of these events, they might start at 150. You just heard about the Formula One. They might start at 150,000. Some of these events could be as much as 500,000. So I would love to put an enhancement in the budget next year so we can, maybe we need to amend your budget amendment if something fantastic comes up, but let's plan for next year. And what is the appetite for that budget amount so I could submit that today?
Commissioner Sammy,
you want to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
So first off, I'm fully supportive of this initiative. I think it fits well with our strategy of diversification. And, the nice thing about health and wellness is it appeals to residents and visitors. So it's sort of a win-win. I support my colleague's direction of like a year-long programming. I think there's two things that I'd like to see activation on, and John S. May directly lead to your enhancement, a signature event. Let's get one on the board. Let's just find one and do it and make that happen. And if that's an ask in the budget, let's get that there. And then second, really enhancing and continuing to dial up our communications, that there's no better place to do health and wellness than Miami Beach. So adding to my colleague's notion here, which I fully support, those are two specifics I'd like to dial up. And I'll yield to him because I think he's got some thoughts.
So we're on the same page. I encourage us to all really put our thinking caps on here and help. I mean, look, parks and recs traditionally in a city, they activate the parks and recs for, kids, seniors, and residents, stuff. But, I think we're tasking John and his team and maybe some other departments is continue doing what you're doing and enhancing it particularly for our residents, but use our assets, particularly our beach and the beach walk and our parks, to go national and international, do something really significant. And so, you know, we're challenging John to do something somewhat non-traditional for a Parks and Recs department. And so I think you're going to ask us for additional resources and guidance to do that, which I think you're going to have a strong appetite to do. Commissioner Samuelin's point, we do need a signature event, right? Something that gets on ESPN and broadcast nationally, internationally. CrossFit Games comes to mind for me because they're already here, except they're in the wrong city. You know, I don't know what it's going to cost or take to get them to host those games here, but that would be an obvious get. Volleyball tournaments, you know, long distance swims, runs, athletic competitions of any sort, I think are things we got to go after. And if need be, we can create it too. We can hire a programmer to go create a game. They'll be responsible for finding the money and the sponsorships. But if we say you can have our beach, you can have our park, go and do something, that might be an opportunity. A couple questions for you, John. Do we have or can we get like an app that residents can like use solely for having a calendar of all of the events that we have going on in the city? Because one thing I would like us to see is we have so many great things going on. I'd love to get notifications of like we have a class coming up, we have an event coming up, particularly just for all of these events that you're doing.
I'm sure something exists. I can't give you the name of it off the top of my head, but I could work with IT and communications.
Because most residents here, you know, we all get texts on our phones for traffic emergencies, right? And it's super helpful. But if we had a resident-friendly app just to say we've got a free yoga class, you know, we've got a Tai Chi class, all that, I think that just kind of pushes that narrative and awareness. Like, this city is about health and wellness. We want to encourage you. Almost everyone's within a five-minute walk from a park. I'd love you to come back to us with that. The other thing, I had a conversation with both you and Mr. Steve Boucher. You know, he has the concessions, particularly on the beach, taking care of our guests on the beach. And he's got all that infrastructure. And he said, you know, could he bring that concession experience to Loomis Park as we activate those parks? So getting smoothies and refreshments and things like that, because people are working out, they're kind of left to their own devices to go get. So if we want to keep people on the beach and working out, you know, can we tie what he's doing into the activations we're talking about here?
Right. I had conversations with him also, and not only with that, it was a real creative session where he was even thinking he might have the opportunity to bring sport and fitness as well as the smoothies and whatnot. So I would love to continue having conversations with him and seeing how we can leverage that partnership to not only make something happen, but make it fast.
I think this ties into Commissioner Samuelin's comment is how do we tie in the business community with what is a Parks and Recs department? Because, you know, they have different ideas and different relationships that they can bring.
Right.
Because we have a vision here, and, you know, are there partnerships that you can work with? And Boucher is a natural for me because you already work with them.
Yes.
Anyway, if you want to come back to us with...
So I think you're saying you need another 150 roughly in the... You want to propose in the budget cycle, right?
Well,
I'm totally supportive of the idea of a signature event, so I want to support that. And if that means you need to propose another 150 in your budget, I think you're hearing that you're going to have support at least from this group of people. John.
I was just going to volunteer that if John needs a little extra time, I'm sure we'll make an exception for him in terms of his budget deadline. And we could actually come back and hear this one more time if you want, if you have an extra month to sort through ideas. What would you like, John?
Well, I don't want to give sticker shock, but this is the Finance Committee. The low-end ticket for some of these events, for one event, is $150. One event is as high as $500,000 based on what I've been researching and getting proposals on. So perhaps I should come back with more details and costs.
Let's do this, because you've got a budget and it's due. I don't want you to hold up the whole budget. Get your budget submitted, put $150 in now,
and then get your budget submitted, and then bring it back next month and tell us if you want $500,000 or whatever. The other thing is keep in mind that we have a contract now with Red Bull, and they want to do activations in our community, and this may be something that you can partner with them because they've got some money that they're going to be spending on activations. And so to check with Melissa on that. Commissioner?
Last thought. I agree with my colleague, Commissioner Areola, of engaging the business community. I know, John, you mentioned the GMCVB, and they are so excited to partner and help us. I would like to request, as part of the planning in the next month, really engage with them. I'd like them to have a seat at the table with us on this marquee event and really help from the get-go.
Yeah, to make you feel better about that, I'm Vice Mayor Richardson actually saw us having a seat at the table when we were having our meeting with them. They're actively engaged. They've done a complete site tour. We've created a little bit of a like a marketing package that highlights all of our facilities. We're in constant communication. So that's taking place.
And John, just be 100%, and in particular on the signature event, which we're going to go for, they really should be very open and helpful to get this going. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to. It's 12 o'clock, so you hit it right on the nail on the head. I think you heard, and if not, I'll just clarify. If you want more money, don't be shy. Come and shy. Ask. Okay, good.
Exactly. All right, and we'll see you back next month. And with that, we're going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Congratulations, Mr. Chair. That's good.